Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to Kings of Non Sequitur. Any topic, any subject, anything goes. With your hosts, Jay and Dre. Your favorite podcast is back on the air, back-to-back nights. We are in the house and ready to rock and roll. You are indeed listening live to Kings of Non Sequitur, the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast, here with you on a Tuesday night, March the 28th, 2023. I'm Dre, he's Jay. You got us for 2 full hours live to get ready for the Hardball, our 2023 baseball preview show. It's a whole new ball game with all these rule changes, and the game might look different to me than it ever has. Maybe I'm being hyperbolic, but Jay, with all these different rule changes, I'm sure you got to watch a little bit of baseball in the exhibition season. I watched a little bit as well. Is it going to be like radically different? Is this really with the shift and the pitch clock and all that? I think it's going to look like different than it ever has. Maybe I'm just being a little too crazy about it. Uh-oh, Jay, I can't hear you again. We were having some connection issues before the show started, but I thought he had solved them. He wasn't making any sound, and then right before we went on the air, he finally came on and said he was here, but there was an issue with his headphone. And the last thing I heard from him was, let me double check this thing that was making it go out. And apparently it made it go out again. So I don't think this is a connection issue because he was connected. I think this might be a technical situation with his headphone. So this is quite awkward because I thought I had him. I didn't know if I had him. And then right before we went on the air, he said, yep, I'm here, and now I don't have him again. And it might be where he doesn't know that I don't have him, so I have to text him. So we're off to a rip-roaring start. Let him know that I can't hear him at all. But as I was saying...
Okay.
Oh, there he is. All right.
All right.
As I was, did you hear any of that preamble that I had?
No, I heard everything that you said. I could hear you. I just couldn't talk for some reason. I've been having trouble with the microphone. Didn't want to connect tonight.
Ah.
So I've got one of these headsets where if you flip the microphone out of the way, it mutes it.
Okay.
So I flipped it up, and then I flipped it back down to talk to you, and it wouldn't connect. So
it didn't unmute.
But that last time I flipped it down and I heard the beep like I usually hear when I'm back on live. So here I am.
Okay, good.
So yes, it will look different. My experience with it from the spring training, and obviously I think they were being, you know, extra is the word. They were definitely being extra in the way that they were applying the rules. The bigger bases is more aesthetically different. I mean, obviously it'll factor into time between the bases or trying to increase the running, giving the runners a little bit shorter distance, maybe entice the game to move a little faster on the base paths as well. So it doesn't turn into a game of strikeouts and homers. Obviously by banning the shift, they're hoping to get some more balls in play, getting through, get things in motion, get some more runs scoring. I think it's stupid. I think you and I are both on the record that banning the shift, it takes away those managerial decisions. And also, if you're into the stats and you know where the guy is going to hit the ball, you should be able to put your players where the guy is going to hit the ball.
Yeah, I agree. It's
The pitch clock, though, is dumb. And I don't know if it's just it's too short, but the application of it, and I like, because you're starting to see, like, some of the pitchers are trying to game it, and some of the hit, you know, like, there's the gamesmanship part of the pitch clock now too. But this whole, you've got to be in the box, ready to go at 8 seconds, or they're going to call a strike on you, is pretty dumb.
Yeah, it's a clock within the clock. You got to be in the box,
like,
8 seconds ago.
Yeah. You want to see your team rallying to come back in the bottom of the ninth inning, and there's two runners on, and you're only down by a run, and, oh, wait, the guy makes the last out because he wasn't in the box at 8 seconds.
Game over.
Yeah.
Everybody go
especially,
home.
Especially as high tension as baseball is, I think they need to find a happy medium here with this pitch clock, because that some of the drama is that time between the pitches, you know? And I get it. We don't need these six-hour Yankees-Red Sox nine-inning game marathons like we used to get, that Sunday night baseball thing. And they've already cracked down on the, you know, Dave Roberts issue, where you just go and get a new reliever every, you know, you might as well just carry 17 relievers.
Yeah.
They're trying. I give them that. Baseball, you know, knows it needs to kind of catch up with the 21st century, but you can do all of that and we still have these terrible umpires.
Oh gosh, that is definitely still an issue. Some ump shows and all
right.
That.
So you can do all the things that you want, but the game is still, you know, balls and strikes, and, you know, out and safe, and all of that is still being called by a group of mostly substandard umpires. And apparently they've also cut down on the amount of time that teams are going to have to challenge plays, if you've heard that one.
No, I didn't hear that one.
Yeah, I believe they've shortened the amount of time the teams are going to have to you know, call for challenges to. I mean, which, again, I'm okay with that as well. You shouldn't, you know, have a long period of time to decide. You should know if you want to challenge something. If it's that egregious, you should know.
Yep, I agree with that. We know all about his football opinions. We know he loves his Jets. We know that he knows that Giannis is elite. I don't think we've ever heard any baseball opinions out of him, so I'm very interested to hear what this is going to go like. Lou in Jersey, how you doing, Lou?
How'd you know it was me? I thought I'd never forget.
Oh,
yeah.
You're unforgettable, pal.
Thanks. Well, I've been doing this now for 10 years, so yeah. So anyway, we're about now, let's say about a mere 36 hours and counting from the first pitch of opening day. And I'll say one thing. It's not your father's brand of baseball, that's for sure, or even your grandfather's brand of baseball. We're looking at a whole different ball game, you know, with these new rules. But you know what? I think it's about time that they did, you know, change it, because you know how slow the baseball games go, especially with, like you said, with the Yankees and Red Sox. That takes about, you know, the whole day. And your whole day is, like, shot to hell. So, you know, this does make, you know, a welcome change. I'll give you one thing that maybe 8 seconds is a better, that might be a little bit too short. If it was maybe about maybe, like, say, within 12 to 15 seconds, that might be more reasonable. I know you're going to get the batter's box in 8 seconds, and you got 15 seconds to get the pitch off. So maybe, you know, if they do try to tweak it, I think it might raise up to, like, about maybe 12 to 15 seconds to get the batter's box in. That would be more legit.
Yeah, they're trying to limit the pitchers taking forever, but they're also trying to limit the Nomar Garciaparra stepping out and doing stuff with his batting gloves for 2 minutes in between each pitch.
Because that's the part of the stall tactic, and I think that's what they want to get rid of. I mean, that's always, you know, stalling. I mean, you know, the players stalling in general. I mean, because that does present a problem. I'm like, will you hurry up already and throw the ball? What a dope.
I mean, but that's, to me, that's part of the charm of the game. That's going to be my old man get off the lawn thing. Is I don't like clocks in baseball because that's the one sport that there wasn't any clocks to begin with, and that made it different.
Well,
that,
let me
that
ask
made
you
it
this:
distinctive.
I mean, does anybody complain about, you know, having a clock in football, which is like the play clock 35 seconds? No. Does anybody complain about the NBA clock 24 seconds? No. So you know, I mean, it's going to take time to getting used to it, but I think once that we do get used to it, say, like, mid-season, I think they're going to be okay with it. Nobody complained about pitch clocks in other sports.
Right, that's my point. Baseball was not other sports; it was baseball. It was different. So I don't want to. I don't want baseball to be like other sports.
Right. When you think about ball and hockey, well, the hockey doesn't have it, but football, hockey, yeah. Basketball, those are timed sports. So having a shot clock, having a play clock, that directly influences the amount of plays that you can have in a game. In baseball, you get 27 outs; it doesn't matter. A game, you know, before they came up with the crazy, even though it still could happen, but before they came up with the stupid extra inning runner on second base thing, in theory, you could have a baseball game that never ends. It could be played forever. So that's where I'm, you know, Dre is right. That's part of the charm of baseball. It's a pastime, not, hey, you know, clocks and penalties and all that type of stuff. So all those other sports are up against a countdown clock. Like football, you got 4 15-minute quarters, and basketball, and, you know, I understand having the shot clock because, you know, before the shot clock, a guy would just stand there and dribble it out for the whole quarter.
Right. Before my time.
Right. It's a long time ago, but that change, changes made sense.
That's still happening
football,
in high schools around the country today. There's still 4-2 yeah. basketball games because they don't have shot clocks.
I remember,
so
football used to have a longer play clock, and then they shortened that, and now it's down to that.
Seconds.
Right, it used to be 45
yep.
seconds. Now it's down to that 35
I think
seconds.
I think I was alive for that.
Yep, I think we all were. So that's pace of play, and baseball's trying to do this pace of play, but it's unnatural to the game. So there needs to be kind of a happy medium. I would much rather see if the batter's not ready at that eighth set, you know, at whatever time hey, give the guy a warning, you know, hey, you get a warning, you do it again, we're going to call a strike. Don't ring the guy up the first time it happens, because there are a lot of examples of this that I've seen throughout the whole spring training where it's not always the batter's fault. Like,
batter's supposed
the batter
to get one time out, so.
Oh, right. And batters are getting sort of deked by the pitchers because the pitchers aren't ready. So the batter's kind of waiting for the pitcher to be set. Well, it's not at 8 seconds. So
now you got to move on, buddy. You know, no more stalling.
Right.
It's so silly. There's no need for all of that.
I think they'll figure it out. Because, if there's enough of an uproar or if it causes a game to change, you know, it's just like with any new rule, you have to iron out some of the kinks.
Oh,
and there will be
course.
Some game-altering decisions with
yes.
with that stuff, and
nobody,
I understand that.
Truth, by the way, I can tell you that it's like, you know, there is going to be problems, especially in the early weeks of the season. I can promise you that. But something did need to be done. The only question is, why is it in this corner? back in my day, I mean, okay, I'm showing my age here a little bit, but you know, even back in the 70s, games didn't take 4 hours to get done, and it was nine innings. And we didn't help that. But now, the game was slow to a crawl. I mean, I've seen a snail move faster in some of these baseball games. So something needed to be done, definitely.
My argument is they don't all take 4 hours now. It's only certain teams and certain games in which they clearly their strategy is to get as many pitches out of the starter as possible so that they can get into the bullpen and really tee off, which I understand that, and I don't have a problem with it.
Name of the Republican
my...
because we know how to...
Yeah.
And
oh, gosh.
Of course, with those two teams, no lead is safe. You could be up 7 runs, and you think the game would be over. Wrong. This is Brett Hart's Yankees, people. It's not over till it's over.
No, because they got into those bullpens, and anything can happen when you get into those bullpens.
They know each other. They know each other too well. That's the thing.
Well, they're
going to rival. We were a division rival, and been playing since the beginning of time almost. You know what
right.
you know what the strategy is. You know how they're going to feel each other out. That's why it happens like that.
They're still going to know each other, so that doesn't address that at all to me. But I'm definitely going to be on my soapbox about that. So we're going to get to our season preview. You got any World Series predictions, Lou?
Right now, no. I mean, in June, more likely, because you can't really pick, you know, World Series winners like before the season even begins. I mean, that's a little bit premature. Once I think we get into like 50 games of the year, then I think we can get a better clue of what's going to happen, because that's when you start to separate the men from the boys. And if you're like, say, well, the Colorado Rockies, your season's probably over then anyway. Oh, boy. You get the idea.
Pick the Pirates against the Rangers. Come on, step out on the limb.
Pirates and the Rangers? Yeah, right. Let's see. Your season ended. Your season ends tomorrow before the regular season begins. Yeah.
All right, we're going to get to our breakdown. We're going to spend 2 hours breaking it down and picking a World Series because it's fun, not because we're going to be correct about it, but because we're going to have fun with it. So that's what it's all about.
If you get a chance, you can tune into my show as well, the Enhanced Sports Show. We're on are you in the Eastern time zone?
Nope, we're Central.
Central, okay. Then in that case, in your case, it's 3 to 5 Central time. Number is 512-543-4662. We're also on YouTube now, and all you got to do is just go into Google and type in the Enhanced Sports Show on it, and you'll see me on camera. That's right. We've now gone to television. Isn't that awesome?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I'm a laughing stock of New Jersey now.
Can't wait to see that. Lou, thanks for coming on, Lou. You're always a treasure.
Thanks. I'll be back.
I know. Lou in Jersey. I muted him. I had to cut him off because we got to get going here. He's something, boy. All right. So our breakdown of the whole season, which we admit is very unlikely to turn out the way we say, because teams are completely different by the time we get to October. You got the trade deadline, you got injuries, you got all that. But we do it anyway because it's baseball, and we're happy baseball's back, and we want to have some fun.
Because baseball's easy. There's really only half the league that competes.
It should be easy because there are a lot of teams that have already decided to tank and aren't even trying.
Yes.
That is true. What's difficult is figuring out exactly which of those 10 or 12 teams that have a chance to win are actually going to win, because that's almost a bit of a coin flip
right.
when you get to how many teams get altered due to injuries and trades and all that.
And that's
but
what makes
you're right.
this, and that's what makes this fun, because you know, it's us. We get to pat ourselves on the back, right? Hey, I got the Seattle Mariners to the playoffs last year.
Finally, after 10 years of trying. So we're gonna figure out these divisions. The rule changes we talked about a little bit. Pizza box bases. I'm not a fan of that. Only two pitcher throwovers. All these rules are on MLB.com. If you want to go read them and look them up and get all the details about the pitch clock and the how many times a pitcher can disengage and no more infield shift. One thing I want to mention about the no infield shift thing is I don't know if you caught the commercials that MLB have been putting out there with different celebrities and whatnot, talking about some of these rule changes. And the one about the infield shift where they have the guy talking about, hey, no more infield shift, that allows the defense to make great plays again. I'm taking a rhetoric class this semester in college online at the University of Memphis. That's just rhetoric. That is straight propaganda.
Yeah.
Fuck are you talking about?
I knew you were going to be all over that one because I saw that commercial and I was like, nope, you lost me.
Going into the game 72-71.
I had to pull a Danielle. I'm sorry. What the hell are you talking about? It allows the defense. Allowing the defense to make plays is the point of shifting. So they don't have to go out of their way to try to break their neck to get to the ball.
You're not making a great play if you're perfectly positioned in you know, shallow right center to catch the ball on a rope. That's not defensive play. That's great managing.
I didn't say it was the point to make a great play. I said it was the point to make the play.
So
that's
now,
the point.
Because there's no shift, these guys have to bust their ass more to make
great
defensive plays.
They got a wrist injury and try to break their legs to get over there. Oh, man. Get out of town with that bullshit that allows them to be great defense. You knew that was going to get under my skin.
So
that is just nothing but propaganda.
Where I will diverge a little bit from crapping all over everything that they're doing, I am okay with if anything that brings back base running and some small ball aspects and some hit and runs. If we see a little bit more of that, I'm okay with that, because I think we're both going to agree that baseball has basically been homers and strikeouts. That's not exciting.
It's a bit of a tough watch. I will give you that.
So I understand where they're, what they're moving away from and moving towards, but, you know, are you throwing the baby out with the bathwater here, right? I mean, are you, you know, cutting off your nose to spite your face, you know, yes, you're trying to fundamentally change the game of baseball, but also are you breaking it at the same time?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Joe Sheen is a great baseball writer, and his point for years has been throw everything else out, and the reason we have nothing but homers and strikeouts is because every pitcher that comes in now throws 98. And
yeah, and all and all these minor leaguers, all they're being taught now is launch angle.
Yeah, and you're not going to do anything else with the ball because they're all throwing 98.
Right.
So just go for the – just go for the fences. Just try to jack everything, because you're not going to do anything otherwise. So his deal is, you really want to alter the game, you got to move the mound back, because these guys, they've outgrown the 60 feet 6 inches. Everyone's throwing 99, 100. You have to move the mound back. And that's radical as hell, but, man, I think I'd rather go for that one move and see how that alters baseball than all these other moves that they're trying to do. So that's what I'm stuck with in my mind is – all these things are trying to counteract what you just said, which is just the homers and strikeouts, which does make baseball tough to watch. I completely agree. But I think maybe moving the mound back might solve all of that. But I don't think they're going to do that, obviously.
Or lowering the mound.
Yeah, that would be radical as well. And one other small rule change that's probably going to get overlooked but might be as effective as anything is no more weighted schedule. 13 division games for each team instead of 19. So these teams that are beating up on all these teams that we're talking about that aren't trying to compete, there's 15 or 16 teams that aren't even trying, and the division winners get to beat up on the you know, the Oakland A's and the Detroit Tigers, a team like that. You get a few less chances to do that. It's not as weighted as it used to be, and 46 interleague games for each team. And like I said, the full rundown of the rules are on MLB.com if you want to look for all of that.
I was a fan of the heavily divisional schedule, so we'll see how this goes this year.
Yeah, I kind of liked it, too. Get to beat up on the bad teams and the good teams. You knew you were going to have a shot at them in September no matter what. You knew you were going to have, you know, another 6 or 7 games against your division rival. So not going to be quite that way anymore. All right, after all of that preamble, you ready to make some picks?
Yeah, let's do this. I'm sounding a little better tonight. I'm not coughing as much. You know, appreciate you taking it easy on me last night. I could sense there were some times last night that you were going to throw it over to me and stopped yourself.
Well, yeah, I knew I made sure to do it at least a couple of times. I didn't want to just have, you know, me and Jerry just monopolize the whole thing.
I know, but I've been doing this show a long time with you, and I'm sitting here and I'm like, oh, there's a silence. And he's going to throw it to me. He's going to throw it to me. And then you were just like, and then you went back to Jerry. I'm like, yep.
I was like, yeah, let me look at something else on the card instead of getting Jay's opinion on. So you are sounding better tonight.
I'm actually glad that you guys did the majority of the lifting last night, because you had a lot of positive things to say.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just a snooze fest, crap fest all over the state of the league. So it was a good show.
Credit to WWE for allowing us to have positive things to say. We didn't have to spend all that time on how old everybody is. Oh, there's Goldberg again, and there's you know, somebody else that's 50 years old. They do have edge, but it's not just populated with all these old guys. So much better job by WWE with their product. So if you missed that last night, it was the WrestleMania preview, and it was much, much more positive than normal.
I apologize if you get a stray cough. I do not want to tempt fate by muting my microphone, because I'm worried that if I flip it up, it might not come, you know, it might not turn back on. So
yeah, we've already experienced that.
I apologize in advance if you get a stray cough tonight.
Hey, we all understand. All right, 2023 baseball preview. It's a whole new ball game. Let's see how this shakes out. As tradition, we start our previews in the division of the reigning champions, and that would be the Houston Astros and in Dusty We Trusty. So, the American League West. So the football preview. I remember we I came up with let's just do our the order of our division and then break down the teams instead of trying to break down the teams one by one. So get our order out there and then have our discussion and debate based on our order and how different it might be.
Yeah, with baseball, it usually comes down to more, you know, we're so kumbaya because it's so predictable a lot of times. So you know who the bad teams are. Maybe one of us has a surprise somewhere. Who knows? That's the fun of it. We always try to find one. But AL West, and it's funny, shows how old school I am was with the Astros. I thought I was going to start with AL Central for some reason.
Or NL West. That'd be really
NL, old. Yeah. Or NL Central. Baseball has realigned and gone crazy so many times. So my order for the AL West, a little bit of an upset. I'm going Mariners, Astros, Rangers, Angels, A's.
You're tempting fate now. You get the Mariners a little hot, and now you're going to go all the way.
They're young and they're very good.
They are young and very good. Only difference is at the top, I'll have the Astros repeat and the Mariners second, and then Rangers, Angels, A's. And any wild cards out of the AL West?
Yeah, I do have the Astros and the Mariners, obviously, as Mariners are coming. So both of them I have coming out of the division. Maybe you do as well, just flip-flopped. But
correct. I do have the Mariners winning the wild card.
So the only difference for us is the division winner. So not a horrible embrace debate moment here for us, but
we do not have to spend 20 minutes on the AL West.
No. The Astros are they're the Astros. Justin Verlander leaves town, so that's going to be a big void to fill. But they still have that's a great rotation. I cannot fault you for picking the Astros. That's probably the chalk pick. I don't know if you have the betting odds.
I do.
I'm sure that is the top betting favorite.
The Astros are the top favorite to win it all. They are the World Series favorite at plus 600.
And it makes sense, right?
And they are minus 190 for the division.
Yeah, it's a solid lineup. I think it's a little light at the back end. It's a very front-loaded, front-heavy lineup, minus Jose Altuve here, dealing with the broken thumb, which they can tell you 8 weeks, but that's gripping the bat, that's bat strength. That might be a longer thing. Anytime these guys are dealing with hands, whether it's the hamate bones or the thumbs, wrists, anytime you have that as a hitter, that time, don't be surprised if it's Memorial Day and Jose Altuve is either not back yet or he's not quite himself yet. But
and scuffling.
Correct. So that's going to be some big shoes to fill and a big void in the top of that lineup. But, like 1 through 5, that's just a monster lineup even without Altuve. And it's a good rotation. Framber's there, Javier, Akiti, Luis Garcia, Hunter Brown steps into the 5 spot. Solid 1 through 5. Bullpen's I don't quite trust anybody in that pen. Ryan Pressly, I guess, is the closer right now. We'll see if he can hang on to that throughout the whole year. Closers are so tenuous these days. But might be the only thing about that team that I look at with a little bit of a side eye would be that bullpen and that closing situation.
But they got a real good situation behind him because if he slips up, they can slip Rafael Montero right in there. I don't think they would miss a beat. And even Ryan Stanek behind them with the experience from Tampa.
And Naris was a closer in Philly.
Yes, that's right. So yeah, the champs, they still have the filthiest rotation. I completely agree with that. You can't really count on Lance McCullers because he's always hurt. But
right.
as we know, when he does get in there, he's very filthy. They still have those professional bats. They don't get rattled. Like you said, you apologize for the random cross. I still remember that Kyle Tucker is like one of the last guys that I saw back when I was going to the AAA games and looking at these guys coming up through the system. He's one of the last ones that I looked at and said, okay, he's the real deal. He's going to be a stud. He looks the part. His swing is perfect. He makes great contact. He's got great tools in the box. I knew he was going to be great as soon as I saw him down there in AAA. And oh, by the way, they had an MVP in Jose Abreu. So just throw him in the fire and add him to the list of professional hitters there. So they're not going to miss Altuve just because they got so many bats already there in that lineup. So that's why I picked the Astros to repeat as division champs. I don't hate the Mariners, obviously. I picked them as a wild card. They got a very tough rotation as well after the Luis Castillo acquisition last year. They can move. They got the same issue at closer. I think that they're set up that they can move that beastly Andrés Muñoz and his 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Yep. They can move him into the closer role if Paul Sewald falters. So just like the Astros, I think they're set up behind their closer. If their closer falters, I think they can make that change very easily. And, of course,
yeah,
those
there's
real
like
young
– there's five guys with closer potential in that bullpen.
Yeah, there's – yeah, a lot of experience with late inning pressure situations for Seattle. So yeah, they look really good. Diego Castillo, I remember him in Tampa as well. And they got those young bats. That otherworldly Julio Rodriguez, he's something else. Can't say enough about him. They add Teoscar Hernandez, good power bat. And Ty France is another one of those guys that I saw come up through AAA that I said, okay, he's really got some potential back when he was a Padres prospect. So I don't hate pushing the Mariners up to number one, but it's the Mariners. You're really tempting fate there, you know.
Yeah, of course I am. But, last year broke the seal. So oh. Sky's the limit.
We both got the Angels behind the Rangers now.
Yeah. Which one do you want to lead off with? Because I think that would be a minor. I think both of us thought we might be pulling something on the other one based off.
Right.
Of what,
right.
Yeah. I like the additions that the Rangers made. Obviously, they're trying to address their pitching, which is always troublesome for them. But and the Angels are Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani, and guys. And that's my problem with the Angels.
Yeah. No argument with any of that. You add Jacob DeGrom. He's completely untouchable. He's also hurt a lot, and that's why he's a Ranger.
Right.
It's great. He's so great. There's no way the Mets would have let him go, except he gets hurt all the time. It's almost the Lamar Jackson thing a little bit that – You know how great he can be when he's healthy, but he can't stay on the field. So you hesitate to give him that money. Expect a much better first half for Marcus Semien. I remember his first half of the season last year after arriving.
So do I.
We both had him. I had him in my fantasy league, and, of course, you had him in the keeper. And, ooh,
still
man,
do.
He scuffled.
I still do. I got to keep him because we extended him. So, but, no,
yeah.
When you've seen the body of work of Marcus Semien and you go, okay, he had one bad half. He's been pretty damn good otherwise. You know, most of the time the good players will revert to the norm. And what was he hitting, 190 at Memorial Day? It was terrible, his first half.
Awful.
And he still ended up having a productive season after that disaster first half.
Yep.
That he had last year. He ended up getting that batting average all the way up to 248. God, he must have hit 300 in the second half last year.
He had a very good second half. I absolutely remember it. I had trade offers all the time for him all the way up to the deadline. So everyone else knew he was going to rebound too. So it was not a surprise
which is funny, being that our team, you know, ended up winning money on the last day of the season. And I remember talking to you around the because we made no trades. And I remember talking to you last year, like, no, I don't need to make trades. I just need guys to be good.
You need the people you picked up to actually do something, yeah.
Correct. And so, like, the best trade we made last year was keeping the guys on the team, and Marcus Semien was a big part of that. So I would expect – I don't expect his 2021 campaign, you know, with the 45 bombs that he had. But, you know, I could see him getting back to that 30 home run plateau with the more – he could be a 30-30 guy this year if the rules allow.
Sure. And I think they have another MVP candidate there. Every year, Adolis Garcia gets a little more.
He gets better.
A little more
year.
Dangerous. Yeah. So, yeah, we both got Texas over. And, it's clearly Shohei, obviously his final ride before he goes to New York in free agency. I don't know if this is his walk year or next year. I think this is his walk year. And there's no way he's going
to. Not about his contract status, but. After him and Patrick Sandoval, Reed Detmers is okay. Don't trust that rotation.
No.
I don't like them. Sorry, I pulled the headphones off for that one.
Oof.
Well, you know, and then again, I've always called it the clown show. I mean, he's clearly probably the best player in baseball, all around best player in baseball. But they have to change so many things for him. They said, nope, he's going to start every sixth day, no matter what. So what you're doing to the rest of your rotation for the star ends up hurting you, I think, in the long run with a guy like that versus just trying to work him in, because you also need him in the field. To me, it's a clown show. It gets booties in the seats. It looks great on TV. It's high drama. Everyone loves him, but I don't think I don't see him winning a World Series if they are changing everything for him.
I think there's a lot of other parts that go into him being a champion. I don't think it has too much to do with anything going on around him. I respect the rest of that rotation so little that I don't think that matters that they are. It's not like they're pushing, you know, Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander back to make room for Ohtani. They're pushing back Tyler Anderson and Jose Suarez and Griffin Canny. No, I don't have much respect for the rest of those guys. I think they're doing what they can and all they can with the guy. I don't know if the Yankees or whoever, I just keep saying the Yankees, but
right.
Whoever Ohtani goes to after he's they got the money to. I don't think whoever he goes to is going to do things much different than what the Angels are doing. I think you have to let him pitch because he's an ace, and I think you have to let him hit because he's a hell of a slugger and also runs. Like you can't stop him from doing those things because he's great at everything, right? And yet still they can't win because of all the other stuff surrounding that team. There's not a good team around them. There's nothing he can really do about it. He can't make Anthony Rendon live up to his contract. He can't make Hunter Renfro do anything other than strike out a lot, which he's going to do there because that's what he's done everywhere he's been. Mike Trout has been trying to do everything he can for that team for years, and there's just nothing you can do. The rest of the team is just not good.
Yeah. And you have Taylor Ward. I mean, the clock struck midnight. He had the Marcus Semien second half and first half reversed.
Right. Red hot in the first half. And
He turned back into a pumpkin like we said he would. Real quick.
Yeah. And Oakland was minus 202 run differential last year. Worst.
A's are garbage. We don't really need to spend much time on them. They traded Sean Murphy, not bunting, Sean Murphy, the catcher.
He could bunt if he wanted to.
They could. I'd really want to find a picture of him in the bunting position for our bait. Just put that up there.
Well, that joke that 17 people in the entire world would get.
I'd be like, what is that? Oh, that's Sean Murphy bunting.
What? Huh?
You have to be a real deep football
fan to get that. No, that everything's going to turn around. Shintaro Fujinami is here. That's going to change everything.
I don't know who that is.
Okay, never mind that.
He's a guy, huh?
Yeah, he's a guy. He's a new starting pitcher, and he's there, and that's going to change everything for Oakland. A's are plus 25,000 to win the American League West if you're feeling lucky.
Wow.
With the long shots. Rangers are plus 1,000.
I'd rather put a hundo on that than put $1.8 million on the Vikings to, you know, lose a 33-0 game.
Yeah. I'll do neither. How about that? Rangers are plus 1,000. Angels are plus 800. Mariners are plus 300. And the Astros, the aforementioned Astros, minus 190 to win the AL West.
Okay. Well, so 100 wins me 300, huh? If I put it on the Mariners.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, you're feeling real lucky.
I wish I could go back and find out what their odds were last year to make the playoffs, because man, I could have made
probably pretty good. Let's move on to the American League Central, the home of my beloved White Sox.
Yes.
1 through 5, your AL Central.
My AL Central is your beloved White Sox, the Cleveland Ball Club, the Minnesota Twins, the Kansas City Royals, and the Detroit Tigers.
And any playoff teams other than the White Sox?
No.
White Sox by themselves. All right. This is the year that I finally jump off of the White Sox bandwagon, which will allow them to go ahead and win the division, thankfully.
Yeah, well, they got rid of They got rid of La Russa.
That's a Freudian slip. That right there was a Freudian slip. Tony La Russa, Tommy Lasorda, same guy. They did. But I've still got them. Three. I still don't, there's a lot of issues there. Cleveland Ball Club to repeat as division champs is who I'm going with.
Okay.
Followed by the Twins, and then the White Sox, and then the Royals and the Tigers.
Yeah, so we're completely kumbaya on the bottom. It's shit.
Yeah, definitely. By the way, I have the Twins emerging as a wild card as well.
Okay. Fair enough. The Twins are always—they're feisty. They're not Rays feisty, but you know, you give them 3 out of every 5 years, the Twins are going to sneak into the playoffs. It just seems like.
Yeah, they find a way, and I like their starting rotation. I think it's sneaky good. Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? Where in the world is Carlos Correa? He went all around the world to every team in the league. He signed 13-year
yeah.
contract with every single team, and he wound up back with Minnesota.
That's right.
So after globetrotting and signing with 14 other teams, he's back, and of course the Twins are happy about that. That was so weird that every other team said, nope, your medicals look like shit, and the Twins are like, yes, we get them back. All right. There's a disconnect
there.
That's
a sneaky offense. There's not a lot of big names in that offense, right? I mean, your average baseball fan has no idea about Max Kepler and Jose Miranda and Nick Gordon, but these are pro ball players, and they somehow find a way to produce. So the Twins are always that under the radar kind of team, and I don't love their rotation, but I really like their bullpen.
Yeah, they got some fireballers out of the pen. And the underrated offense, the glue to that almost feels like it's Jorge Polanco. Like every time, I'm watching the White Sox games, every time they think they got the Twins right where they want them, the Polanco comes up and hits a 3-run homer and just fucks them over. And I'm like, fuck that guy again.
And they'll get Royce Lewis back for 2 weeks during the middle of the season.
Until he gets hurt again.
Right. They get to look forward to that.
Byron Buxton is the guy that could be the glue if he could stay on the field. Speaking mm-hmm. of guys who get, I don't know if I've ever heard of this. You want to talk about, I don't know if this is coddling a youngster or, you know, the new era of taking care of a young guy and doing all you can for him. The plan apparently is to take Buxton and DH him a lot, if not permanently for no reason than to save wear and tear because he's made of toilet tissue and he's always getting
hurt. He's fragile. Yeah.
He's extremely – but he's such a great defender. Just the thought of
– I know.
He's an awesome center fielder. We can't use him in center field because he gets hurt all the time. The thought of that is like mind-blowing, but that's apparently the plan there. But
so
you know
they're
what?
So they're rolling in with Michael Taylor in center field.
Good old Michael A. Taylor, the former Royal, is going to be their center fielder. He's not bad. He's not Buxton. He's definitely not Buxton.
But they clearly want Buxton's bat.
Right. They want to keep him around
as much as possible.
They're just frustrated. They're aggravated. They can't keep the guy on the field. And they're like, okay, this is our new plan. Don't go on the field, you fragile piece of garbage. Just stand there and bat and don't do anything else. And when you're not batting, you're going to sit there on that X that's on the bench and you're not going to move because if you get up, you might trip and break something. So just sit there and don't do anything.
Hey, you got Joey Gallo in that lineup. And with the shift band, he might hit 210.
Which would be a 40-point increase for him.
Yes.
Pablo Lopez from Miami was a sneaky, really good acquisition. He was very solid for the Marlins. Sonny Gray is a sneaky good ace. He's not throwing 95 like he used to, but he knows how to. He's a pitcher. He knows how to pitch. He actually pitches. Joe Ryan is a hell of a young arm coming up behind them. Tyler Molly is solid. Kenta Maeda, when he can stay on the field, is solid. That's a sneaky, really scary rotation, actually. And you already said the bullpen is also very good.
That bullpen is so much fun. Lopez is sort of the de facto closer, but then you got Joan Duran throwing 102 behind him. Griffin Jacks. They got some dudes. Theobar, there's guys. Emilio Pagan, who was a closer.
That's right.
In the past. So yeah, there's some dudes in that bullpen. A quietly good team. They probably get Chris Paddock back in the second half. See what he can do before he gets hurt again.
But there's plenty of options. So all that about the Twins, and I only got them as a wild card, and you don't have them in the playoffs at all.
Right.
So you're the White Sox is your division champs. La Russa's gone. That's
La Russa,
should be great.
I'll tell
right?
you what. It, to me, I do believe, and we can argue about this one, but I think that the White Sox have the best rotation, without a doubt, in that division. Cease, Lynn, Giolito, they bring in Mike Clevinger back to the AL Central after he left for a year or two when he left Cleveland, and Kopech. Those guys could stay healthy. That is as solid as a 1-5. That's up there with some of probably a top five rotation in baseball. I don't like to say nice things about the White Sox, so you know this hurts. But that is a great rotation if healthy. Asterisk if healthy. And that's a good lineup. It's not a great lineup. But there's
very
there's
top
enough,
heavy.
That yeah, they're what we talked about or what I talked about, like with the Astros, except that top is not that Astros top.
No, not quite.
So the bottom end of that is going to be, we'll see. There's Yasmani Grandal, he'll hit his 10-15 bombs, but there's a lot of swing and miss there. No idea what they're going to get out of this Cuban kid, this Oscar Colas, who made the team. No idea what they're going to get out of him. Elvis Andrus, who had sort of revitalized himself. We'll see. Again, is this going to be more of a running team? Because there's speed in this lineup.
Sure. Yeah, they can be very aggressive on the bases.
We'll see.
Between Anderson and Luis Robert and Billy Hamilton, when they want to throw him out there for even more speed. Benintendi used to run in Kansas City. Yeah, there's a chance that they could really be, the go-go White Sox and make some things happen on the base pass. So that's all potential, though. That still remains to be seen. Yeah, I definitely would push back on the rotation being that great because Giolito last year had some starts where it was like, what? Where are you throwing the ball, dude? He had no idea what he was doing. Lance Lynn needs to bounce back. Cease was amazing, of course, but he wasn't good enough to be an all-star. I'll never get over that. Clevinger was atrocious with the Padres last year, so he's trying to make his career bounce back. Not a good start off the field. He's got some domestic issues as well, so he's got a lot going on there. So I'm not counting on him pretty much at all. I don't know how long he's going to last. And Kopech is still inconsistent. I love his arm, but he's still trying to find his way. So potentially a really good rotation, but I don't know. I don't really trust it. And then, of course, the closer situation really torpedoes them. As big of a loss as Edwin Diaz for the Mets is Liam Hendricks for the White Sox.
Do we know, is he coming back?
There's no timeline. It's just like Cookie Carrasco when he got the leukemia for the,
right.
for the what used to be the Indians a couple of years ago. Like you don't want to try to put any kind of pressure on a timeline because it's cancer. You have no idea. So you just kind of sit back and wait and hope. So, yeah, that's what's going on with Hendricks. Is I think he threw a little bit on the side in camp, but that's just to kind of stay loose. But no one has any idea when he's going to actually pitch again. So that's huge. They're going to miss Abreu out of the lineup, but they're going to miss Hendricks more because he was the fireman. He was the man contending for best closer in baseball and had the attitude, had the cussing and the, you know, the bravado. Like with the leadership for that team, Tim Anderson takes on that role, but I think it's a little much when he's the only one out there because all the rest of those guys are, you know, Eloy's not rah-rah, Robert is quiet. Anderson is kind of the guy, the fire plug. And when it's when he's sharing that with Hendricks, when Hendricks comes out for the ninth and now he's the fireman and he's going crazy, that takes the heat off of Anderson to have to be the guy. And now with Hendricks down indefinitely, I think that's a big loss, not just on the field, but leadership-wise as well. For a young team, I think they need as many veteran leaders as they can get, and losing that guy is going to be huge.
Yeah, so that leaves us with Cleveland.
That's my team to take the AL Central. I was surprised that they got through last year and won it, but now that I look at the way they're made up, and they are the favorite to once again win the division, plus 125. Twins are plus 200. Sox are plus 250. Very top heavy with those three, because then the Tigers and the Royals are both plus 3,000 at the bottom.
Man, not happening.
The reason I'm going with the Guardians, they just like to hit. They just got guys. You talk about hit tool, you know, with the scouting tools, 80 on the hit tool. Everybody in that damn lineup, hit tool, hit tool, hit tool. Just, the whole team is just hit tools. Stephen Kwan, hit tool. Ahmed Rosario. They just gave Andrés Giménez a 7-year contract today, which he earned with his play last year. Hit tool. Then they add Josh Bell, who's you know, hit tool, another guy. Josh Naylor is there. They just got guys that hit up and down that lineup. And young guy, Oscar Gonzalez, if he, you know, lives up to his reputation and his potential. And then, oh, yeah, that MVP candidate every year, Jose Ramirez, the king of hit tool, because he just keeps hitting. He's ageless. He doesn't stop hitting. You can't get those guys out. That's why I got them to repeat, because that lineup, it's not like a bunch of sluggers. They don't have anyone that's going to challenge Aaron Judge for the home run title or anything like that. But they just keep hitting, and they do not stop, and they're so damn aggravating. So that's why I got them to repeat. The rotation is decent. Shane Bieber might be a big deal losing Tristan McKenzie. He looks like he's going to miss maybe the first couple of months with an arm injury. So
I saw the news, and it just keeps getting worse.
Yeah, shoulder strains are never good. So, yeah, that's, you know, the more news you get on that, the worse sometimes it can get. But at the moment, it looks like a couple of months maybe, and then we'll see. But they got youngsters. They'll try to Hunter Gaddis and have him take his place in the rotation. I think they're decent enough, and just the guys that they keep getting those hits. All they need is about a 1 or 2 run lead, and then Class A comes on. And he might be the best right now after Edwin Diaz went down at closer. They don't have to worry when they get to Class A in the ninth because he's just shutting everybody down.
Yeah, Yeah, no, and that's a good bullpen also that leads up to him. Karinchak would close for 20 teams in the league.
Yeah, probably.
So it's a good team. I can't fault you. You're chalking tonight. You're very chalky, but
I am.
It's okay.
Well,
it's the baseball preview show. I mean, it's...
As we said, we know who's going to be there. We know who's
right.
good. We just don't know which one's going to win at all, but we know
and
who's going to be there.
And even when you're talking about the betting odds are basically saying it's three teams at the top of that
division. It's a
three-horse
race. Yeah.
Yeah, put them in a bag, jumble it up. Somebody's mm-hmm. coming out of that division, you know, and then we do we need to talk about the Royals and the Tigers?
Do you have any thoughts on any of them?
I mean, they're both really bad.
Yeah. yes, correct.
The Royals are almost a forgettable team. You know, you think they brought up all the young kids, and I thought they were going to, you know, have that sort of like youth renaissance last year. They were aight, but there's just not much there. And the Tigers are like the post-hype team, right? So the Tigers also brought up guys last year. They brought up Riley Green. They brought up Spencer Torkelson. You know, their pitching's there's really just nothing that they just do nothing well. That's my problem with the Tigers.
Correct.
Tigers are going to lose a lot of 6-4 ball games.
I'll throw up the number for both of them. Both of those teams answers any questions you have about either one. One team gave up the most runs of any team in the American League.
Man.
That would be the Royals. And then the Tigers scored less runs than every other team in the American League. They scored 557 runs. The Royals gave up 810. That's all you need to know about those
that's
two teams.
That's so bad.
The least scoring and the most runs given up. And neither one of them did anything to improve that. The Royals are going again with
Royals,
Zach Greinke as their
ace.
The
Royals
their
can't develop pitching. So they got to bring in old guys.
Zach Greinke as your ace was a joke last year. They're doing it again.
Yeah.
God. So that's our look at the AL Central. Extremely top heavy with those three teams. The American League East, which I'm sure Lou and Jersey was very interested in our thoughts on the AL East.
It's an exceptionally competitive division. So when I give my 1-5, I mean, just keep in mind my 1-4 in that division are all really close. This is, I think, the tightest division in baseball. I've got three teams coming out of this division, a division winner and two wild cards. So I'm going Jays, Rays, Yankees, Orioles, Red Sox.
With the Rays and the Yankees as wild card teams.
Yes. The Jays, the Rays, and the Yankees, I believe, all win 90 games this year.
I am going different. We're definitely going to have some discussion about this division. My 1-5 in the AL East, Yankees, Rays, Blue Jays, Orioles, Red Sox.
So we both have the Red Sox in last.
Yeah.
And we both have the Orioles in fourth, although I have there being quite a gulf between the Orioles and the Red Sox.
By the way, I have Tampa as a wild card in that division.
Okay.
The odds makers see this not as close with those with the bottom two. They have it just like the AL Central. They have a three-way race and then the bottom two not even close. They have Yankees plus 115, Blue Jays plus 190, Rays plus 350, then Red Sox plus 2,000, and Orioles plus 2,500.
So they've actually got the Orioles as their odds least favorite team.
Yeah, it's hard to, and I don't blame them because this is one of those that I thought you would have the Orioles last, and I thought I was going to get one on you, but I guess not. But it's hard to give the Orioles that kind of credit and put them over the Red Sox or anybody else because they've been so down for so long. But I think we both agree that they're young talent.
Sneaky. That's a sneaky roster. I mean, we both have them in fourth, but that's what I said. 1 through 4, I don't think is this huge separator. I mean, like I said, I think the Jays, the Rays, and the Yankees all win 90 games, but I could see the Orioles finishing at 80 to 85.
I agree. I think they're going to fight along with the rest of those teams.
I think the Red Sox are a 70-win ball club.
Yeah, that's about right. They got
a little long in the tooth, and I just don't see the production there. I think that that rotation is bubblegum and baling wire right now. And in that division, the only thing that might help the Red Sox is they don't have to play those teams as much.
Yeah, not quite as much. So it won't be 19 against the Yankees. If it was, that would be trouble. That'd be 16-3.
Yeah, and the Jays. I mean, and that Rays lineup that's just so maddening. Mm-hmm. And this Orioles outfit is going to be sneaky good.
Yeah, Red Sox, too many question marks when you think of Trevor Story. You don't know when he's coming back. Chris Sale is trying to finally come back and be healthy. Corey Kluber. Kenley Jansen, they finally addressed their closer situation. They got Kenley Jansen as their closer. Kenley Jansen is a Hall of Fame closer. He's also 91 years old. There's going to be some issues there where he's going to break down.
He had a ton of saves last year, but you do not want your closer carrying a near 4 ERA.
Yeah, he had some times where he was getting beat around there. He did not look like the old Kenley Jansen. Well, he looked like old Kenley Jansen, but not in the
I mean, and sometimes when you're that dominant of a closer in reputation, you get a longer leash than a lot of other guys would. And I believe that's why he has accumulated the amount of saves that he has. Yeah, 3.38 ERA last year. That is not elite for a closer.
Oh, God, we're fucking twins. I was just about to say that's not elite.
Well, no, and it's Lord. Not. And actually, and Kenley Jansen has been over 3 in his ERA 4 out of the last 5 years.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, 2021, he had a 222. Other than that, 301, 371. Yikes.
Mm.
He still has the K9s. He's walking dudes, though. So now he's becoming wildly effective.
That cutter, sometimes it doesn't cut where it's supposed to.
Right.
Yeah, my thoughts on the Orioles, like I said, the offense, the young guns, obviously a lot of potential and a lot of things to look forward to. I'm just so underwhelmed by those arms. That's my problem with the Orioles. They get the very meh Cole Irvin from the Oakland A's, right? And he's instantly their number 2 or number 3 starter. Like, Cole Irvin should not be your number 2 or number 3 if you're serious about contending. The young bats are very exciting, but the arms, they still got some development.
Yeah, and that's also a bullpen that you're just waiting to fall apart too. Felix Bautista, I don't know. He discovered himself last year, but we've seen a lot of guys like that with the live arm who've suddenly found some control and then poof, it's gone again.
Not only that, but if he keeps it going, all that's going to do is make him trade bait at the deadline, just like they dealt the guy to Minnesota last year. So
why not? I mean,
exactly.
If your ceiling is fourth place, ride him.
Absolutely. Jorge Lopez. They got a hell of a first half out of him and then said, okay, that's enough. Get out.
But I like that. I do like that offense, man. That is some studs and youth. So you get that thing put together. If you can figure out that pitching staff, you could be a third place team by 2025.
Very young and exciting. Okay, I want to talk about the Blue Jays because we flipped on Toronto because a couple of years ago I had the Dunedin Blue Jays coming out of the COVID era and winning the division and bashing everybody, and that didn't go well at all. So now I'm off of them, and I got them third and out of the playoffs, and you got them winning the division. So
I like that young offense. They can mash. man, Springer, Bichette, Guerrero. I'm just looking at this 1 through 9. They brought over Dalton Varsho from Arizona. Anybody you can get out of Arizona, it's like getting them out of hell.
We have rescued you from purgatory.
Yeah. They get Matt Chapman, Whit Merrifield they brought over in a trade. I mean, you know, Kevin Kiermaier is going to be good for 6 weeks till he face plants in the wall.
That's his move.
But he's the Aaron Rowan of the Blue Jays. But and the rotation, that rotation's pretty sweet. It's not, again, if you don't watch baseball and all you know is stars, you really won't know these guys. But that's a solid 1 through 5. Kikuchi, he needs a bounce back. He's looked good this spring. He definitely would be the one who needs to step up in that 5 spot the most. But, yeah, Manoah is a stud. Gausman, he's going to give you 7 1/3 just about every start. Bassett, that's a sneaky signing. Left Oakland, he's back now in the American League after a year in the National League. So I really do like they're 1 through 5, and in that division you got to pitch, because that every team in that division is going to hit, so you better be able to pitch.
I'll agree with that. I'll even say that another sneaky guy is if they can get Jose Berrios back, mm-hmm. where he was going to be the Twins ace a few years ago, and he kind of fell off a little bit, so if they can get him to pitch like he used to be able to, then that's another huge addition to their rotation. Yeah, I actually like their rotation too. I agree with that. And Jordan Romano was an extremely solid closer. Here's my issue with Toronto, and maybe I'm putting too much value into it. But you talk about bringing in Dalton Varsho to make room for him. They give up the slugging in Teoscar Hernandez. They ship him off to Seattle. So they picked up versatility with Varsho. I'm sorry. I'm not letting power walk away in that division. I'm not switching power for versatility in the AL East. That's my deal. I'm trying to contend and slug with those guys. I'm not trying to be more versatile and more athletic. Varsho can play more positions. He can do more things for you. But I want the power, man. You developed Teoscar into one of the basically your three-hole hitter. Out of nowhere, he developed into that power source to go along with Vladimir Guerrero and Bo Bichette, and you acquired George Springer in free agency a couple years ago, and that's a hell of a 1-4, and now you just throw one of them away because you want to get a little more versatile. I did not agree with that at all. Too much value for me on Teoscar Hernandez. But I didn't like that. I think their offense, whatever wins above replacement that they may have lost in that, I think that's enough. I think they've lost just enough to be a little less potent offensively in that offense, in that division. So I didn't like that move at all. The rotation throws strikes. So that's I agree with you there. But I think the power loss of Teoscar hurts them.
Well, we both agree. I think we both had the Rays in second. So we're kumbaya there. So I'll have you talk about the Yankees. So that's your first place team.
That's my first place team.
I have a feeling we're going to have pretty similar thoughts about the Rays.
Yeah. The Yankees bringing Aaron Judge back. That's everything. If they lost him to free agency, I would not have had the Yankees first in the division. They bludgeon teams to death, and that's their main bludgeoner. And they brought him back, and you have to have him because you can't rely on Giancarlo Stanton to bludgeon because he gets hurt. They had to have Judge. That's the centerpiece to everything. But he's not alone. There's other guys there. There's kids ready to help. They got the youngster in the lineup in the middle of the infield that they're counting on. They think he's going to be a big help to them. Volpe. They got another youngster, Cabrera, that made the team, Oswaldo Cabrera. They got guys that they sent down, Oswald Peraza. He's waiting in the minors to come up and help. So that's in addition to the veterans that's still there, Rizzo and Glaber and Josh Donaldson. I've always been a Harrison Bader fan from his days down here in Memphis. I think he's a sneaky good pickup that they made last year. I think they still got the big power with Judge, and I think that makes all the difference. And of course, adding Carlos Rodon to that rotation is just sick. Now you got Nasty Nestor, Garrett Cole, Rodon, Severino when he's healthy, Frankie Montas, Domingo Germán. So they got the arms, and I like the kid Clay Holmes that stepped in to be the closer after Aroldis Chapman sort of completely broke down last year and lost his job. Then Loaiza got behind him. That's another situation. If the closer falters, I think they really got the guy back there at setup that can step in and do the job just as easily. So I think they're all set as far as the bullpen goes as well.
My only concern with the Yankees is that rotation, staying healthy.
Sure.
They've already got three of their starting five, their normal starting five, Montas, Rodon, and Severino, all starting the season either completely done, Montas with the shoulder surgery. And then Rodon he's a walking injury, but when he's pitching, he's an ace.
He's absolutely an ace.
But do you get 20 starts from Rodon? Because you're not going to get 30.
Probably not going to get 30.
That's my only issue with the Yankees is if that rotation can't stay healthy, they're really going to be asking for a lot out of the rest of those guys and kind of holding that thing together. Last year, by the way, 2020-22, first only season. Now, Carlos Rodon's been in the league since 2015. Last year was his first season making 30 starts.
Yeah. Well, he's due.
Well, yeah, because the three seasons before that were 7, 4, and 24. And the numbers are there. When he gets right, when he gets in a rhythm, I mean, and last year he earned what he got. off of last year because he was an absolute monster. Pounded the zone, struck tons of guys out. Sub-3 ERA, he is a number one, but can he just get, it's just maddeningly frustrating trying to predict what you're going to get out of Carlos Rodon. As a former fantasy owner of his,
Right. Well, he's the DeGrom issue that the Rangers are going to have. The same thing with DeGrom is how many times you're going to actually get him out there.
Right, because if they, they can't get these guys right. And then Severino gets hurt just a few days ago. So he's going to miss some time. And it seems like this is like a never ending story. It's like Groundhog Day with some of these players who are just always healthy. And I just don't know if the Yankees are going to be able to hold up for the long haul. And obviously they can always they're the Yankees, right? They'll just make some trades.
They'll pick up somebody.
They'll bring some people in. I mean, what their starting rotation starts the year as, it won't look like by August 1st. We know that. I think it's going to be a struggle for them, especially if their offense has any extended lapses, because they had a few of them last year.
Did you say a struggle for them?
Struggling.
Yeah.
Got to get some Joe in there.
They had some surprisingly dry stretches last year.
Sure. Not every team can slug, 160 games, out of 162. There's going to be some dry spells.
Oh, right. And that's a team that's still built like it's built to play baseball last year. I have a feeling some of these more surprising. No, you know what I'm saying? Some of the more surprising teams this year, I think, are going to be teams that are, like Cleveland. Who are just going to drive you insane. Right. And now you can't shift these guys.
Right.
So these guys are going to just be like the BABIP gods.
That's why I don't think the Rays are going to fall off anywhere.
Exactly. So we want to talk about them. The Rays are, boy, I'm glad I don't hate them because they would be a fun team to hate.
So annoying. So annoying.
Imagine, the Rays – are like what the Twins used to be to the White Sox.
Oh, hated them.
The Fleas.
The Fleas, yes.
The Fleas. That's what Ozzy called them, right? We're thinking the same there. But that's the Rays are like the Terminator. They just don't go away. They're always there.
So damn solid.
They lose
solid.
Somebody.
It's
so
irritating.
It doesn't matter. They develop. We talk about what the Astros have done and what the Cubs did, but nobody just develops and makes shrewder moves. Because the Rays aren't all homegrown. The Rays, for some reason, can take everybody else's scraps and turn them into a playoff team. I don't know how
right.
they do it.
I don't either. Here's why I think they're so dangerous. Not just the being able to hit and you know be fleas and get
yeah.
it in the hole that you can't shift them anymore. Look at the pitching now. This is the team. Remember, that's the organization that sort of invented the opener.
Yeah,
they don't need open.
They don't need openers anymore. Now they got some dudes.
If their arms stay healthy, you talk about Glasnow making his way back. If he can stay on the field. You got a rotation. You got Shane McClanahan, the whip leader. You got Zach Eflin and Jeffrey Springs came up last year and made himself a star. Rasmussen, if Shane Baz can ever get himself back on the mound. They don't have to send guys out there to pitch the first and second and go sit down. They actually have real starting pitching to be annoying with. Glasnow's got an oblique now. He'll be ready to go in May.
Maybe.
And then as far as their offense, you talk about the one guy that they brought over that's been the spark is another one that I saw down in the minors down here that I'm a fan of, Rosarena. And he seems to get better every year too. And they'll just pace the guys around him. When it's Manuel Margot, Itzhak Paredes came out of nowhere. Brandon Lau, when he's healthy, is a slugger. Yandy Diaz on the corner. It's just all these guys. You're like, who are these people, and why do they keep getting base hits? But they're so annoying. They just keep doing it. And Wander Franco might be the big star in the middle of all of that if he can stay healthy. So
yeah, and there's a little post hype with him too.
Sure. Yeah, he's really good, but he's just got to keep it consistent. He's got some consistency.
Watch them make something out of the great Joe Siri.
Hey Siri, steal home for us. He just did that in the spring training game.
So that's the thing with the Rays is they just drive you nuts and they're always there and they're gonna win 90. Pretty much almost every year. Last year they were a down year for them. They only won 86.
That is the American League.
Yeah.
And we're not kumbaya on all of them. So we had some interesting debate there.
That's good. We're pacing about right. That was about 40, 45 minutes. And we got 42 minutes for the NL.
Let's see how we feel about the National League West. You're 1 through 5 out there in the NL West.
I'm gonna go down with the Padres until they take me with them. So I'm going Padres, Dodgers, Giants, D-bags, Rockies. Of course, I have the Dodgers as my wild card. That kind of lets me off the hook because then if it's just the order I get wrong, I'm okay. But I'm going Padres, Dodgers, Giants, D-bags, Rockies.
That would be bold if you had the Dodgers completely out of the playoffs altogether.
bad things can happen.
You got a real upset in there as far as your order goes, but it's down in the 3 through 5, so it kind of doesn't matter. I have the Dodgers on top again. I have the Padres second. I have the Rockies third. And then the Giants and D-backs.
So that's a big jump for the Rockies.
You got them winning a
bunch more games. They lost 94 games last year.
I was looking at my rundown, and then I was looking at the odds on the board. So I think I was confusing your pick with me. I think I'm the one that's got the big outlier as far
you
as the odds go. Because the Rockies are plus 15,000 to win the National League West, and I got them third.
Well, they're not doing that. But you've got to make a jump. So
I do.
The floor is yours. You can give us a little rundown here, quick, of the Rockies, since this is really the shocking one.
Right. Dodgers minus 120, and then Pods right there plus 115. So it's a two horse race. After that, Giants are plus 1200, and D-backs are plus 4000.
Wow.
The Rockies three is just, I feel like Chris Bryant has a comeback season in him, one of those, you know, comeback player of the year type seasons. He got the big contract and really couldn't stay on the field last year, just kept stopping and starting. Yeah.
I do want to see him do well. I don't like the, you know, a bunch of these guys that the Cubs let go and you're watching like, oh, maybe this is why they let him go.
Mm. Well, they let him go because he wanted to get paid, and nobody who wanted to get paid got paid by the Cubs.
Right.
But that's a whole other argument there. I don't know. I got a bit of a feeling. Brendan Rodgers is one of two second basemen in his division, ironically, to go down for the year in spring training with a torn labrum. Pitching is uninspiring as always, and yet I just feel like they're just barely good enough to be better than the Giants and the Diamondbacks. I think it's more that I'm down on the Giants and D-backs more than I'm really high on the Rockies.
Yeah, and it's easy to be down on those teams. I don't think I mean it's the Padres and the Dodgers, and then I think it's a very large drop off until you get to those bottom three teams.
Definitely. And we just got them flip-flop, San Diego and L.A. So you kind of went in on the Padres a little bit. You're going to go down with that.
Well, they're my Blue Jays of the American League. I'm shocked I don't have them fighting it, playing in the World Series. I should have Jays and Padres every year. Got to get one of them there. I like the moves. You know, they bring Xander Bogaerts over. That lineup is, we talk about dudes, that lineup is solid. All the way top to bottom. There's guys that can mash all the way up and down that lineup. There's some sneaky speed all the way up and down that lineup. Not great, but it's so hard to predict stolen base numbers and motion numbers this year with the bigger bases and the faster pace and the less throwing over to first. I mean, we could see some running statistics like we haven't seen in a long time in baseball.
Right.
They're taking some things out of it.
Neither of us ever expect to see like a Ricky Henderson again with 101
steals. No, or Vince Coleman, or something. We won't see that, but we could see some 40, 50 stolen base guys, I think, this year.
Okay.
That's just a feeling, especially as these guys start getting down the time. Like if you're looking up and there's only like 2 seconds on the pitch line, go.
Right.
They're
going to step off and balk you back, you over to second, or they're going to hurry up their pitch and really screw things up.
Right.
If
the guy's thrown over twice already, you can't do it again.
Right. Right.
Just go.
I don't know. I if you throw over twice, and then you take off, and the guy – so he can't step off? Or
works. I'm sure he can still throw to another base, right? So at that point, you're not picking the guy off anymore. At that point, you're throwing out an advancing runner.
Yeah, you're getting involved in actual baseball play. You're not just throwing over.
Right.
Okay.
But if you've already had a pitcher throw over twice, first twitch, you're gone.
Right. He can't step off or look you off. Yeah. It is going to be crazy with some of these teams. Just a matter of who's going to be aggressive about it and who's not. Obviously I'm not down completely on the Padres. I do have them making the wild card. I don't know if I mentioned that, but I do have the Padres as my wild card. So we both got LA and San Diego in the playoffs is the upshot.
We do.
Basically.
Yeah.
But the reason I don't have them leapfrogging the Dodgers, I don't trust Fernando Tatis. I think that's the big, right in the middle of everything good that's going on with the Padres is that guy who seems to have something in his brain. Like he cannot make the right decision, whether it's drug suspension or throwing his motorcycle or lying about the drug. There's just something going on with him that he just always seems to make the wrong decision. He's playing the get your ass thrown out of baseball like bingo car. Like he's only a couple of spots away. He's got domestic violence rap that he hasn't filled in yet, and maybe a cocaine outing in a nightclub or something. But he just keeps making the wrong choices, and I think it torpedoes the whole team because you always got to think about him, and then when the game's over, you got to get asked about him, and he's got the suspension to start the year. He's not going to be there for his team to begin the year because he's still serving suspension and whatnot. The ill-advised supplements, he can't be counted on, and Juan Soto couldn't be counted on after the trade last year because he wasn't playing up to his best baseball, and Josh Hader couldn't be counted on after he got traded over there last year because he wasn't playing his best baseball, and he had issues closing games out. I'm not saying they're going to be duds again. Either they both might be great this year, but I got a raised eyebrow at both of them because of how bad they played when they first got traded over to San Diego. Like, they definitely did not respond well to the pressure of that pennant race over there, and it showed. So I don't know if they got that figured out and turned around or not. But yeah, adding Xander Bogaerts is huge. He's fits right in with Manny Machado in the middle of that order. They definitely got some studs. They obviously got some studs in the rotation between Blake Snell and Musgrove and Yu Darvish. They're a little light behind them, though, so I worry about the depth of the rotation if those guys get hurt. And like I said, Hader, they probably got enough guys in the bullpen to take over for him potentially if he crumbles again, but that's a huge piece. You gave up a lot to get Josh Hader because he was arguably the best closer in baseball, and he was not anywhere near the best closer in baseball last year after they traded for him. So just looking at them sort of with a side eye, like I don't got them crumbling and finishing 500, but I kind of look at them like, I'm not so sure about you guys.
I totally can get that. There's a lot. There's too much. There's so much talent there. You know,
there's a ton of talent there. But then that's why I got LA number one, because there's still a ton of talent there. Even though they lost some talent, there's still so much left. You know, anybody with Mookie Betts, you still got to look at them like, okay, can't take them. Can't take the crown from them. I mean, you're going to take the crown from them, so I understand it, but I still think they're the Kings. They went 111 last year. I don't think they're going to win 111.
It was 111.
I don't think they're getting there. Gavin Lux blows out his knee. That sucks. But they're not lacking replacements is my point for them. They got guys. They got plenty of guys waiting to take his place, and they got JD Martinez in there to the DH. They're still the cream. They're still the cream at the top. They got that uncertainty at closer now, without Jansen, without Craig Kimbrell. Now they're relying on Evan Phillips. They might try to use Brewster or Gratterall at some point. So there's some question marks there. So that's something I would worry about with them as their bullpen. But Dave Roberts is smart. He'll figure out the right pieces. I still got the Dodgers as the Kings.
Yeah, and that's again that's. I can't fault you.
Yeah. And you got him as the wild card. So we both like the Pods and Dodgers right there at the top.
Yeah.
Diamondbacks and Giants thoughts.
Boy, I it's hard to have any. The Diamondbacks, you get to watch a whole lot of Corbin Carroll. He's a top prospect in baseball. Hey.
Okay.
I guess that's good. Hey. All right. There's not a lot there.
No, there's not. Less than potent lineup. Rotation is all right. That bullpen is just yuck.
Yeah. And I don't have any particularly strong thoughts either about the Giants. I don't like their rotation. Not at all. I don't think that there's anybody really. Alex Cobb, boy, talk about reclamation guys. Alex Cobb. I mean, what are we going to get out of Sean Manaea? Okay, it's guys.
Yeah, there's a bunch of guys.
And they'll score a few runs, but not many.
They got some slugging, but that ballpark I don't think is conducive to getting a bunch of sluggers. It's so hard to hit the ball out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're bringing in Mitch Haniger and Jock Peterson, okay, but how many dongs do you think they're getting? I don't think they're getting more than 20 for either one of them.
The Giants are that team that every few years just kind of jumps up and screws everybody, but I don't think this is the year. The top of that division is so heavy. I don't see it happening.
Yep, I don't either. So that's our NL West. I gave the futures for that division. NL Central and your Cubbies, and I have seen a lot of Cubby love out there already, so I'm very curious to see if you follow suit with that.
It's funny because I have the same – I could have cut and pasted last year's standings, Cards, Brewers, Cubs, Reds, Pirates. I think that the – and I don't have anybody other than St. Louis making the playoffs, but I think that 2-3, I think the Brewers and the Cubs are close to each other. And so are the Reds and the Pirates, but not in a good way.
You can't get more kumbaya than this one. Cards, Brewers, Cubs, Reds, Pirates, and Cards are the only playoff team out of the five.
Yeah,
get any more kumbaya.
I think that the Brewers and the Cubs kind of both meet each other somewhere around 80 wins. And that the Cardinals sort of by default win this division. I don't think the Cardinals are the greatest shakes. 89 wins probably wins this division. That's what's really sad. So they don't have to be great. They just have to be better than those other four teams, and that's not that hard to do.
Right. I'm not going to remember who somebody nationally on TV picked the Cubs to win this division. Who it was.
That's some Cubs blue Kool-Aid. I understand it. It's easy to get excited because they're better. It is just a better roster. There are professional hitters on this team now.
It was hard to be worse.
Right, but you know they signed Dansby Swanson, they signed Trey Mancini, they signed Cody Bellinger, Eric Hosmer. These are all professional hitters. So that is already going to make them better. And the rotation it's okay. And I think that's where they fall apart. There's names there too. And they're not going to be as bad, I think, as they were last year. Last year they won 74 games. Actually, I think that was a bit of a stretch for them because they had to actually come on a little bit to get to that because they were pretty bad. They were down in Reds Pirates area for a lot of last year, and then they kind of came on a little bit, surged a little bit late, and then they make all these signings, and they just can't help, but they're just going to be better because they have better players. I know that's the simplification, oversimplification of it, but like I said, they just signed a bunch of professional hitters, and they're going to just accumulate more wins this way.
Yeah, that's, again, it was hard to be much worse than they were, and just adding professionals will help them be better. No,
right.
Sometimes the most simple explanation is the correct one. But I just still laugh at 7 years and $177 million for Dansby Swanson. Like, who do you think he is? Like, I guess my deal is I look at all the guys they let go after they won the title and rescued that franchise from purgatory after however many years, and then basically let every single person that helped them win the title go because they all wanted to get paid. And so you're saving all that money to do what with it? To give it to Dansby Swanson? Okay. They could have given it to Javi Baez, and he could have sucked like he's been sucking. So it would have looked like wasted money either way. But I guess my point is, why not give it to at least a couple of the guys that helps you actually win the damn title instead of saving it to give it to some Jamal?
Yeah,
give
that money to Wilson Contreras.
Kyle Schwarber, yeah.
Yeah, especially now that the NL has a DH and he is, you know.
Like, how many years did we talk about that?
Yeah. So, yeah, they could have given this money to those guys. I mean, Dansby Swanson's not a bad player. Excellent defender. I mean, that Cubs middle, up the middle defense is, you know, between Swanson and Horner, that's
mm-hmm.
that's really good. I mean, they're gonna save a lot of runs just being better defensively. You know,
and now baseball is going to allow them to make great plays again, so they can really show their talent.
Right. They're going to have to, you know, hurt themselves diving for the ball because they can't be where they're supposed to be. I guess Ian Happ is like the only guy left.
Right.
And kind of the corpse of Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah, to go along with the sort of reclamation projects there, Marcus Stroman, Jameson Taillon,
Their Drew names, Smiley. They're guys. And at some point they'll get Seiya Suzuki back, and he'll be another banger in that lineup.
Yeah.
He'll be better. Because he's got better players around him.
But the top of the division better?
No,
neither one of us see that.
No, they'll score a lot of runs. They'll get that. They'll go on some streaks. This is the thing with the Cubs. They'll go on some, like, you know, where they'll win 8 out of 10, 9 out of 11, and they'll look really good. And then they'll just fall flat on their faces because that pitching staff is going to let them down.
Yeah.
And that bullpen is going to let them down.
Oh, Michael Fulmer is closer. I know it's spring, but that don't look good so far.
That is correct. Michael Fulmer, and he's got Brad Boxberger behind him. I will tell you something. It'll be mid-May, and Adbert Alzolay will be the closer for the Chicago Cubs.
You heard it here first, folks. We both got the Cards at number one. Don't need to belabor about
them.
Yeah,
that's an easy one. They're the best of what's left.
Well, the pipeline is the backbone there. Every year they bring up some other new kid that's going to be
Nolan Gorman.
That was last year.
Last year, Jordan Walker.
This year is going to be Jordan Walker. Yeah. This is be somebody else next year. Just every year here comes another kid that just fills in.
It was Lars Nootbaar, who doesn't look very Japanese to me, but Lars Nootbaar.
Got to look on one side of the family. Don't look on don't look on the European side. Look on the other side.
Yeah, but Tommy Edman, you know, there's a lot to like there. They grow, they develop. Their pitching staff is really good. Did they finally cut bait on your favorite pitcher? I saw he left.
Which one? The guy that set the records.
The kid you killed.
Yeah. what the hell is his name? I'm not going to remember because it's late.
I can't think of his name, but we know who we're talking about. I believe he's out of town now.
Yeah, so he's not there anymore.
Change of scenery might be the best thing for that poor kid.
Yeah, set the record. I was there live. Set the record. Most strikeouts in a row in a minor league game with, I think, 11. And I was like, this guy's going to be the next superstar. And then he just could not stay healthy. Poor guy.
So, I think they're just the most solid team top to bottom. Like I said, the 89-90 wins, probably all they need.
Yeah. And, you know, anybody with Nolan Arenado, Paul Goldschmidt, they carry the freight. You got the backbone there.
Yep.
But then they fill around with all these kids, and then all these kids just keep – they're annoying too. Just hit, just scraping along, you know, Brendan Donovan and guys like that. I think Nolan Gorman is going to be a killer too. I know he fell off last year. He started out hot and kind of fell apart, but he's going to be one of those post hype guys. I don't know if it's going to be this year or not, but he's going to be an all-star and he's going to be a killer. He's just got that left-handed stroke. And when he's on, he's killing it. Cards one and then Brewers two up there in your neck of the woods. Hey, the Brewers added Contreras. Wait.
Wrong one.
Oh. Wait, the Cards added Contreras. Wait a minute. I'm confused.
Yeah.
Hang on. Okay. Yeah. Cards added Wilson Contreras, the all-star Cubs catcher. Brewers added William Contreras, the brother.
Yes.
As my
daughter would call him, wish.com Wilson Contreras.
That's good. I like that.
There you go. You got that one for the cute factor.
Yeah, I like that. Or if you're a Walmart shopper, he'd be a great value contrarian.
The roll, he's the rollback. Now, you know, the Brewers lost that team when they traded Hader. And although Hader has his issues, that was like white flag trade moment. They lost that locker room completely. I mean, that team completely went in the tank after that trade. I mean, dudes were crying. I just don't think you just recover that easily from that when all those same people making those decisions and the manager who I can't stand is still there. You know, I don't think it's it's not a compliment when you say that he manages every game like it's game 7 of the World Series, because he truly does. And I think he puts too much strain on his bullpen and makes some baffling decisions in games that don't mean anything. And and then they lose, and then the front office loses the team and most of those guys are still there. There's some nice pieces there. I mean, the Brewers are the definition. You look them up in the dictionary, they're the definition of I. They've got studs at the start, at the front of that rotation, and Burns and Woodruff. And then, and then they're I after that. And the bullpen's okay. Devin Williams is a MLB quality, closer. And the rest of that bullpen's not very good.
But that's the question. Can he hold up as the full-time closer? He was great as the setup guy to Hader, but now he's the man. Like, can he do that?
Yeah.
How many guys don't translate?
How many guys go from, you know, how many times you see the eighth inning guy gets that promotion to the ninth inning? And it's not quite the same. That pressure's up another notch.
Can't handle it. Not everybody can handle that.
Yeah.
And not much behind him. That if he doesn't handle it, that's the problem. Like Matt Bush, really?
Right.
No.
And that's the trouble I have with that manager is how many fourth inning hooks he gives for no reason.
Dude, and then 162 games. You can't be doing that.
Yeah.
You got six months of this.
I mean, they'll be up 6-1, and the starter will get two guys on base, and he's running out there to yank them. Oh,
gotta go.
My God.
Gotta get them.
I'm so glad I'm not a Brewers fan. I would want Craig Counsell fired every single day.
Eventually, you're going to get your wish.
But I love taunting all my Brewer fan friends about Craig Counsell because they all hate him.
Reds and Pirates, we both have the Reds over the Pirates, but I'm sure it doesn't really matter too much.
They might
flip-flop.
Finish tied.
Yeah.
They did last year, 62 and a hundo. Oof.
Right. But the Pirates are, I say, much bigger favorite to finish ahead of the Reds. It's not much bigger, but it is significantly, there's a separation. Pirates are plus 4,000 in the National League Central. Reds are plus 6,600. That's quite the gulf.
There's just not much to like about either one of those teams, other than the Reds. And the reason I have them a little bit over is that young rotation.
Yeah,
I think
exactly
Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo, they're going to grow into that rotation. They're not going to score a lot of runs. There's that's another lineup of guys. I do like Tyler Stevenson. He's a little sneaky, but it's just, it's that young rotation. I think that's really, for me, all the only thing that gives the Reds the edge up over the Pirates.
So that's the most kumbaya division of any football or baseball preview ever, because not only do we have the same order, but
the same reasons.
We have the same reason we separate the Reds over the Pirates is the arms. I wrote the arms are the story here. Green and Lodolo and Graham Ashcraft, they can all bring it. And that's what separates them over the Pirates, because the Pirates can't hit, can't pitch, can't pick up the ball. O'Neill Cruz is going to make a great Yankee someday. That's something to look forward to.
But no, the only thing, but then you look at that rotation for the Pirates, and what have they got? Rich Hill?
Yeah.
Vince Velasquez? Oh, my God.
I like Ronzi Contreras. That's about all I can say about
that. That's great.
that's my only compliment. Yeah.
And they had to get him from somewhere else.
of course.
But yeah, there's not a lot to like there. And the Pirates
And the moment he wants to get paid, they'll get rid of him too.
And then that offense. I mean, okay. Outside of Ke'Bryan Hayes and O'Neill Cruz, I mean, Andrew McCutchen, is he 90 years old?
Kutch is back. Let's go.
Kutch is back. G-Man Choi.
And Carlos Santana. Yeah.
You know what the funny thing is I'm looking at this Pirates lineup. If this Pirates lineup was in Tampa, they'd probably win the division. Because this looks just like a Tampa Bay Rays lineup. It's so bad. But
the difference is
that the Rays aren't suckers and they develop these guys and somehow, you know, pan the gold, you know. This shows you how razor thin the margins are in baseball, right?
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's see if we have the same kumbaya in the National League East.
I'm going to say we don't.
It's also a three-team race, according to the odds.
It is. I'm going Braves, Mets, Marlins, Phillies, and Nationals.
Okay.
Trying to be a little different.
And any wild card teams out of that?
Yes, the Mets and the Marlins.
That is that's different. Calling on Miami, you'll get some money there if you want to pick them for the playoffs. I am going Mets, Phillies, Braves, Marlins, and Nationals.
Well, we agree on the Nationals.
Yes. And I've got two wild cards coming out, the Phillies and the Braves.
Okay. So we have the Braves and the Mets both in the playoffs.
Right.
So the only difference for us is I have the Marlins and I have the Phillies sliding back to fourth.
You have the Phillies out.
Yes. Everybody can't make it.
That's true. Braves are the favorite, plus 110, followed by the Mets at plus 170, and then the Phillies at plus 300. And then all the way back to the Marlins at plus 4,000, and then even farther back to the Nationals at plus 25,000 to win the East.
This is just to win the division outright.
Yes.
Yep. So I've got the favorite in the Braves this year to win the division. And they're an easy team to pick to win the deal. This is where I'm chalk.
Mm-hmm.
How do you not? I mean, again, we talk about pitching. That rotation. Max Fried, Spencer Strider, right at the top. I mean, that is studs all around. Up and down. The Braves, they pitch, they hit, they're solid, they play defense. I think the Braves are the cream of the crop in that division.
I got them third, so you'd think I have a huge argument against them, but it's one of those that I got them third, but they could finish within four games of first. They are very solid. It might come down to those young arms, Jarrett Schuster and Dylan Dodd, holding up the back end of the rotation. But yeah, the front guys, Fried and Strider are strike throwers. Old man Charlie Morton is still throwing strikes, so no argument with that. Looking forward to a full year of Ronald Acuna Jr. back in the lineup.
And that lineup is loaded.
Yeah. And the kid Michael Harris came on last year as a rookie and set the league on fire. So, very exciting lineup. And they add Sean Murphy, not Bunting, at catcher. So, looking forward to the Braves. He may be. You may get a chance to have your picture of Sean Murphy Bunting.
Sean Murphy Bunting,
being a Braves uniform, that's all. I don't hate the Braves at all. I just got them behind the Eagles and the Mets, the Phillies and the Mets. It's getting late, but you got the Phillies out, so we definitely got to talk about the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah, I think where I'll go to first is the Marlins, because I think that's the elephant in the room here.
You got the Marlins in, yes.
I do, and sometimes you look at a team, you look at their 1-9, like, you know, the Marlins to me have Rays vibes this year for some reason. Like, it's just this, it's a group of guys. Nobody really jumps off the page at you, but there's some pros in there. You know, they signed some hitters. You get Jorge Soler, Garrett Cooper. You know, they got Gene Segura. I've always been a big Gene Segura guy. I really like them. And then they've got one of the sneaky rotations, I believe, as well. Alcantara, Lizardo, that's pretty – it's solid. Johnny Cueto, who had that sort of, like, renaissance last year with the White Sox, he comes over. He's just going to go out there and give you, what, 3 earned runs in 7 innings every game.
Yeah, he's still getting it done. Not the same way that he used to, though.
And he's not throwing anything by anybody, and he's just doing it with motion and angles, and he might be one of the first crafty righties.
He is a crafty righty.
He's a crafty righty. There's not many of those. So I've got that weird little feeling that every year you've got that one team that kind of surprises, and maybe they don't make it all the way. I mean, like the Orioles were for 3 quarters of last year, right?
Yeah.
I'm getting those kind of vibes because the Orioles were in it. I mean, they were in the wild card hunt, and they faded a little bit late. I've just got that kind of sneaky feeling that the Marlins are going to sneak up on a lot of people this year. And I'm going with them in a big, big upset. Now, that doesn't think I think that the Phillies finish, 12 games behind them. I think that's going to be a race to the finish, and I think it's going to be really close. There's just something I don't know how to quite explain it, which is hard because this is a podcast, and my job here is to explain things. There's just something about the Phillies I don't like, and I don't know if it's like, do I just not trust that rotation? Because I look at that rotation, and outside of their top two guys, they're kind of like, I don't trust Taiwan Walker at all, and he's your 3. Yeah. The lineup is solid. That's a bunch of studs and dudes, and that team is going to hit. But again, like with the Yankees, that's a 2021 team or 2022 team, and I don't know how the teams are going to do that are just homers and strikeouts this year, because yeah. I think that the teams that are going to find gaps and find holes that weren't there before and extend innings and get guys in mode, I think this is going to favor those teams more than the guys who are just station to station waiting around for a 3-run homer.
Well, I think the Phillies are well mixed up in that respect. I think they got the guys that try to hit over everyone's head, like Schwarber and yeah. Castellanos, and Bryce Harper sometimes gets in that mode as well. But I think they also have guys that are little fleas and kind of get around. When I think of the center fielder, Brandon Marsh and the kid Bryson Stott at second base, and I was going to take over for Segura, and Alec Bohm over at third. And of course, Trey Turner can do everything. He can hit it out and he can get around and run around the bases. So that's a huge addition for them. You talk about adding the best all-around player in the game, not counting Ohtani, of course. I think that's huge for them. I wanted to put them over the Mets. I just couldn't pull the trigger on that. The one thing I do have a concern about for the Phillies, they got to know not to use Craig Kimbrell anywhere other than closer, right? They've got to be paying attention. They got to know that if you bring Craig Kimbrell in, you can't be fooling around and saying, well, we might use Gregory Soto, we might use Alvarado. No, you got to use Craig Kimbrell as your closer. If you use Craig Kimbrell anywhere else, he's going to get destroyed.
Sixth or the seventh.
It's going to be ugly. It has always been ugly.
Yeah.
And they
he's
lose
out there covered in oil, and you're throwing lit matches at him.
Just lit on fire. Yeah, losing Reese Hoskins is huge. Torn ACL. They're waiting on Harper to return by May or June. So they got a lot of weapons in that offense, and they're going to need them because they're going to be lacking some firepower a little early on. I think they're going to be more dangerous in the second half than the first half offensively. And the arms, Nola and Zach Wheeler at the top, great 1-2. And then behind that, it gets a little shaky with Walker and some of these kids, Bailey Falter, Andrew Painter. They're waiting for these kids to develop. So we'll see if they do that this year.
So we both agree on the Mets. And I mean, yeah, it's easy to talk about that offense, but any pitching rotation that has Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, and Carlos Carrasco, oh my God. First of all, it's like they're putting trying to put the Tigers back together, with Scherzer and Verlander getting reunited. But you got Carrasco. Oh man, that starting five, those guys hold up, and those guys aren't really, you know, don't want to curse them. They're not major injury risks, but that Mets starting rotation is. I mean, when Carrasco is your five, that's pretty good.
Well, we'll see what this Singer kid does. Don't know how he's going to translate. We've seen David Peterson. We've seen some of the kids behind them get a chance here and there. They're definitely top heavy in that rotation. If Scherzer and Verlander give them, you know, 32 starts, that's just lights out 1-2, of course. Huge, obviously, losing Edwin Diaz in the World Baseball Classic. I'm not going to belabor that. I think we know how I felt about that. Just bullshit. Really sucks, but they have the resources clearly to make adjustments. So they'll give David Robertson, old man Robertson, the first crack at being the closer. They got Adam Ottavino behind him. He's got a lot of experience at that. Even Brooks Raley's got some experience closing down in Tampa. So they're going to overcome that. I just hate that they, you know, that he's such a big part of that team. His attitude, his fire. They got, you know, they play the trumpets and here he comes and the place goes crazy. And that was a huge attraction for a sport that clearly is looking for attractions because they got to make up all these new rules trying to get fans back in the ballpark.
Right.
And what I love about them is offensively, as much as I, you know, love the guys that's there, Lindor and Starling Marte and Polar Bear Pete, they can call on reinforcements in the minor leagues. They got Francisco Alvarez as the best, you know, young catcher waiting in the wings. They can call on him. They can call on Brett Beatty at third base if Eduardo Escobar falters. So they got weapons waiting in the wings. So they're really lined up. And that's why I love the Mets at the top, because I think they're built now and they got guys built for the future.
Yeah, they're hard not to like. So that's our top team. We've got 3 minutes left here on the live show. But we always do it. Do we want to talk about the Nationals. Well, let's move on to our predictions for we usually do ALCS, NLCS, World Series. So who you got?
In the American League, I actually like in Dusty Retrusty to lead the Astros back into the World Series. That rotation is
okay.
Stupid. I got them beating the Mariners. I think the Mariners will make a nice run and a surprise and be there in the ALCS. And in the National League, despite not picking them to win the division, I'm going to take the Phillies to come up, get a healthy Bryce Harper, get back on track, and be there at the end and win the National League over the Dodgers. So I have the Astros-Phillies World Series.
Okay. I have the Astros getting to the ALCS the same as you, but I have them losing to my Toronto Blue Jays.
Ah.
In the National League, I've got the Mets losing to the Braves in an AL East showdown. I've got the Jays over the Braves. Got the Toronto Blue Jays winning the World Series this year.
All right. Going all in on Toronto. I will take the Philadelphia Phillies to figure out a way to outlast the Houston Astros in the World Series. I'm taking
the
Phillies.
So you're calling on the team. So you're saying they start slow, but that second half surge carries them all the way to a World Series title.
Get Bryce back and figure out some trades or probably trade and replace Rhys Hoskins at first with a stud. And they'll make it work. And if Kimbrel doesn't work out, they'll make a trade there and get somebody to close out the back end of that pen. But that's my pick. the Phillies.
Baseball more than any other sport, right? What we're doing now, this is purely for fun. We really do not think that this is really what's going to happen because it's such a long season. There's so many injuries, right?
Yep.
And then there's the trades. I mean, the most robust trade market in all of sports is Major League Baseball. So,
yeah, correct.
You know, you get that team that gets hot, and all of a sudden they didn't expect to be there, and then they go all in. It sometimes it pays off. Sometimes you're the LA Rams, and you pay the price. you win it all, and then you're shit. You know, sometimes
you can't say they paid the price because they won it all. So nothing.
They
else
won
matters
it all,
after that.
But now they are right. They made the deal with the
nothing
devil,
matters.
So
they
made that
they
deal
did
with the devil. And the devil,
sure
devil
did
is calling in his favors.
But it's okay because they got that.
They
ring
won the title. Hey, there's 31 other teams that would have taken that deal.
That's right. Exactly right.
I mean, look at the Cubs. The Cubs made that deal.
Yeah.
They
definitely made the deal with the devil. Yeah.
I'm okay. I love my Cubbies, yep. But you know, I got to see something that hadn't been seen in over a century, and I'm can't take it away from me.
That's right. Nothing matters after that. All of the guys leaving and nobody getting re-signed and all that doesn't matter.
It was frustrating. It was frustrating because that team should have had more than the one, or at least more. You know,
more cracks at it.
Attempts,
yeah. More,
yes.
More bites at the apple.
Yeah, they should have had that. Baseball is so much harder than all of the other sports to have that run. Especially now, it's so hard. It's such a long slog of a season. You know, ball hits you on the hand, right? Or hey, you're celebrating a win and you go down, but your sniper gets you.
Jump it up and down and blow your knee out.
We've seen that before. Who was the guy who jumped on home plate and shattered his leg?
Was that Prince Fielder?
I don't remember, but do you remember that? When the guy he did the big leap onto home plate and
he just exploded. Yeah.
Yeah.
Think
and then
Prince
after
Fielder
that, all the teams started doing the joke celebration where the guy would run up and touch it real gently and they'd all, you know.
That's right.
So,
but yeah,
we are in the after show now, but yeah, you've got some issues. You really took that Edwin Diaz thing hard, so hard that I thought you drafted him.
See, I fooled you. I hadn't had my draft yet. So
you didn't kill the guy and you were still mad about it, which is shocking.
Exactly. No, because it's a bullshit tournament that they made up because they were losing fans and losing popularity. So they said, how do we get fans back? Let's pretend like we care about the other countries in the world and have a tournament. What? No, it's so dumb. And I understand it was exciting. The final was, I actually watched the last inning of that World Baseball Classic final because there's nothing else on.
I watched none of it.
I watched none of it up until that. And I watched sort of, you know, slack jawed as the manufactured a Shohei Ohtani versus Mike Trout finale on the very last at bat. And I'm like, oh man, if I didn't know better, I would say that they completely made that happen like in a script. I was like WWE or something. And Shohei winds up striking him out to win the whole World Baseball Classic. Great theater, great drama. Okay. That's not repeatable. You can't manufacture that again. You can't. Next World Baseball Classic is probably not going to have Japan versus United States, Mike Trout versus Shohei Ohtani in the ninth inning with the whole game on the line. I don't think you can count on that happening again.
What it does for me, and I didn't look too much into this, but I'm going to be looking into this, is hard fading anybody who pitched deep into that for this season. Because that is way too early to be logging those kind of miles on your arm and then have to ramp it down to ramp it back up again. I'm very curious to see how many arm injuries these WBC pitchers end up coming up with.
That probably is something very good to follow or something. And it reminds me of the sort of, not a controversy, but a lot of the talking heads the next day after the World Baseball Classic was over. It was like, well, America was in great position to possibly, you know, do something, except all their best pitchers weren't competing in it because it's the World Baseball Classic and they don't want to ramp themselves up that, you know, that early.
That is smart.
And it's very, very smart and very understandable. So that's why you get to something like that, and Japan is able to send out Yu Darvish for the eighth inning and Shohei for the ninth. And meanwhile, America, I think their starting pitcher in that championship game was Merrill Kelly.
It was.
Of the Diamondbacks. And it's like,
yeah.
Really? That's who you're
that's
sending
out? That's the best we can do?
Not Verlander, not Scherzer, not Gerrit Cole. There's a lot of great American pitchers I can think of that I
reminds
would
you of the Olympic when we were sending the amateur basketball teams.
And we finally lose, and they're like, okay, that's enough of that.
All right,
well,
now we're
going to
send Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley and Scottie Pippen. Yeah. And Patrick Ewing and Larry Bird. Yeah.
I used to be able to. I can still name all 12. It's going to take me a minute, but now.
Oh my God! Who else was it? Was Clyde on that team?
Yeah, I start with Leitner because he was the one college guy, so I always get him out of the way first because I'll forget him if I don't do him first. So it was Leitner. Then I mesh up the four guys that were on the same two teammates on the same team. So it was Stockton, Malone from the Jazz, and then Jordan and Pippen from the Bulls.
Jordan and Pippen, yeah.
So that's five. Then that I forget how I used to have a system to try to get to the last seven, like the centers, Robinson and Ewing. So that's seven.
That's just cheating.
Right. The idea that the rest of the world,
I mean, they were beating
guys.
Teams by like 60 points.
They were, Angola still is recovering from that. Drexler was definitely one of the guards. Oh man, I get kind of stuck because there's piecing together the other great players that were around. Larry Bird was there, Chris Mullin, I believe, was there. It's late. I'm not going to remember the last couple, but yeah, it was sick. It was absolutely disgusting to watch those guys destroy everybody that came in their way. And America maybe could do something like that if they sent their best guys, but their best guys have no interest in this bullshit.
Bullshit. We did it. The 1990 Dream Team, that was the first one.
Yeah.
Jordan, Bird, Barkley, Malone, Stockton, Ewing, Robinson, Drexler, Pippen, Chris Mullin, Christian Leitner. The only one we're missing
Who'd
was
I miss?
Magic.
Ah! How the hell did we miss that one? Oh. Like I said, it's late. If it was daytime, I would have remembered Magic, too. I would have got there. Only because it's late did I miss that one. But, yeah, that's kind of a good team. That's kind of the best team ever in any sport.
And then the 96 team.
Which I would never get in a million years because I don't
Well, it's almost the exact same team. Barkley, Bird, Drexler, Ewing, Magic, Jordan, Leitner, Malone, Mullen, Pippen. It's the same team.
Yeah. Now, the Dream Team 2 was totally different, and I don't remember most. It was like Sean Kemp and some other guys that are – it was definitely a step down.
Ah, here we go. Dream Team 2.
Yeah.
It looked up Dream Team 2, but it gave me Dream Team 1 for some reason. Barkley, Penny. Okay. Grant Hill, Malone, Reggie Miller. Hakeem.
Okay. On the American. Wait a second. Hakeem on the American team?
Yeah.
Really? The Nigerian nightmare? Okay.
1996 U.S. men's Olympic team roster. Hakeem Olajuwon. Hey, wait, look. Lars Nootbaar was on this team, too.
No, he wasn't. He was on Japan.
Oh. Yeah, so Hakeem and Shaq. We're on that team. Gary Payton, Scotty, Mitch Richmond.
Wow.
He must have won a bet or something. the Admiral and John Stockton. So that's still a great team.
Okay, I got the wrong Supersonic. It wasn't Kemp, it was Payton. Okay.
It was Payton. So that's still an excellent team.
It's an excellent team, but is it not clearly a step down from Dream Team 1?
Yes. Yeah, anytime. Well, yes, you took off Jordan.
Yeah.
Took off
Start
Ewing.
With that.
You took off Bird. Yeah. So yes, it was a step down.
Yeah, I could have never guessed pretty much anyone on Dream Team 2 because I completely forgot all about it. And I understand that they were dominant as well, but it wasn't Dream Team 1. Nothing was Dream Team 1.
No, that was fun.
Greatest of all time.
Yes, cheating. That's what I called it. that's not fair.
But again, that's kind of my point about the whole world baseball. It's just so manufactured and
yeah.
Useless.
But the Dream Team was our response to getting basically boat raced by professionals with college
yes.
kids.
Yes. Our response to sending the college kids over to lose.
Yes, to basically be sacrificial lambs to all of these up-and-coming European teams.
Wait a minute. We yeah. invented this sport. How are we still losing? No,
yeah.
okay. No, that's it.
So we just
now the
so
funny
we,
games
the,
are over.
And that's when it, I mean, that really was like, that was just fun. I mean, it was just, you know, and it, of course it gave me that great sense of pride, just destroying everybody.
There's even politics involved in that because you had Magic up there receiving the gold medal and making sure to wrap himself in the flag so that he can cover up the Nike logo on his jacket because he didn't
yeah.
endorse Nike.
Right? Which is, it's so...
I'm going to wrap myself in the flag, literally.
Well, it was good. It was a good baseball preview. Get some prognosticating out of the way. It's like you're flying into some weather Friday.
Yeah, it's Chicago. It's April. It's going to suck. I've been complaining about that all week.
It's supposed to be rainy and nasty on Friday. So hopefully... Now, they have... I will say they have toned the forecast down some. Because
was it
going to
be
days,
worse?
Oh, yeah. They were calling for 70-mile-an-hour winds.
Ah!
Down there on Friday. And now they're only calling for like 20-mile-an-hour winds. But then they're in the overnight, they're actually calling for severe thunderstorms, flooding, downpours, hail, damaging wind gusts, and isolated tornadoes.
Ooh, fun.
Yeah. Welcome back to Chicago.
Well, don't say I don't know how to have a good time, huh?
Well, and that's okay because Saturday, for the greatest day in sports, rain and snow showers, just like it's all, you know.
Mm-mm-mm.
Isn't that just perfect? But it's that way almost every year. How many really nice greatest
no.
days in sports have we had?
It has not been above 45 degrees
no.
Since I moved out of Chicago. I have not been up there where it's been above 45 degrees.
Right. If it's sunny, it's cold. That's,
yes.
Yeah, I can remember driving into some of those on ice.
And I remember the last two White Sox games I went to were like 7 or 8 years ago, and
yeah.
both of them were bitterly cold. Bitter cold.
Right. So you said you're due in at 7 on Friday.
Yeah, but as you remember last year, it takes a long time for me to get from
yeah.
Midway Airport to out there where you're in your neck of the woods.
So knowing that you're – no, I was going to say, because knowing that you're flying in a little later, like at 7, meaning I don't probably have to – if I had to come and pick you up, I wouldn't have to even be at the airport till probably 7:15 or 7:30.
Right.
You got to get off the plane and get your luggage, you know.
Right.
So I would probably say I'd be more likely to come and get you knowing that you're going to be coming in, you know, it's coming in at 7, you know, trying to drive all the way across from the northern suburbs down to Midway in rush hour, not happening. But, you know. If it's something where I know I could come and get you at 7:30, it's like, okay, if I kind of stay a little bit farther out, stay out in the burbs, leave around 6:45, 6:30, and then try to make it in there, that I can do. If okay. just means you wait for me for a few minutes, that's no big deal. That's better than, you know, probably you waiting for a train and then a change. Yeah, because that trek that you had last year on the I don't know what happened. That's the longest damn train ride.
As I explained, first of all, it's literally about a 15-minute walk off the plane to the train platform. There's so many corridors and turns and twists that you have to get through just to get over there where the train is. It is not convenient at all.
I got to say, after dropping you off last year, Midway's changed a bunch.
Yeah. Yeah, they were the first time I ever went to Midway back when I first started seeing this woman in Minnesota.
It used to pull in right off of Cicero and then pull into the parking lot, and there it was. And now you got to do all these like spins and turns, and it's like, what the hell?
Yeah, you could like walk onto the plane almost from the bus stop. It was so close. But back then they were just starting
the
construction.
Sometimes that actually happens because the planes actually roll right out onto the street.
Yeah, they just bypass right through the wall, and we don't need a wall. Just pick you up right there on the street, right next to the bus.
Step off the bus right onto the plane, or step off the plane and right onto the bus. There you go.
It reminded me a little bit of Chicago when we flew to Cartagena, Colombia for our last vacation, because you're flying over some housing, and you know you're looking into these people's living rooms, and then there's a runway.
Landing in Midway is so bizarre because you feel like that the wheels of your plane are rolling on the rooftops.
You're looking right at the people. Like, hey, how you doing?
Because at least O'Hare does not have that same feel.
No.
You're still going over houses, but then you're going over some businesses, and then you're going over some fields, and then you land. Midway, it's houses, 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 runway.
Runway. Hey, whoop, we've landed.
Yeah, Midway's a strange, strange airport. That's why I'm glad you're flying out of O'Hare. And I'm glad it's not going to be at 4:45 in the morning or whatever it was.
No, it's going to be at a reasonable hour.
That's good. So, I will, unless anything changes, I would say plan on me, you know, being there. And for all we know, you could end up being delayed with the weather.
I was going to mention, best laid plans, you think it's going to be easy just going there at 7:30 and picking me up, but then... Oops, the flight was delayed.
No. I will make sure to you send me your flight information, and I can track arrivals and departures. Because I don't. Once you're up in the air, you're up in the air. It's a short flight. That's like a 90-minute flight from Memphis to Chicago.
But then it's another 90 minutes just waiting up there for them to clear us to land.
For them to let you land. Yeah. So I know it's supposed to get dicey. Friday, so it's supposed to be warm, windy, wet, and wild. So,
well, I didn't see the warm part anywhere. I don't know. Maybe that's during the day.
64.
Oh, okay, that's during the day.
You got to take my perspective into this.
Right.
64 is a heat wave.
I won't see 64. I'm gonna land at 7:30. I'm not gonna. I don't know what 64 is.
I was outside. I was cleaning my car out today. I'm outside, and I was just like enjoying the sun and the warm weather, and it was like 40.
The sun and the warm
weather.
Huh?
I was excited to see patches of grass where the snow had all melted finally.
You guys have been getting it up there, I know.
We just missed a big one. There was one that hit Green Bay and hit the Fox Valley, so like Appleton and Sheboygan, Oshkosh, that whole eastern side of Wisconsin. Oshkosh got 20 inches.
Fuck.
That's an hour and a half east of here.
Ooh.
We got nothing.
Really?
This storm started and spun itself right over this one spot over and over and over and completely missed us. We didn't even get a flurry. It was sunny all day, and if you drive 30 minutes to our east, you're getting slammed.
Well, somebody in had a rosary in their hand the entire time.
Yeah, we completely lucked out on that one because we started off being in that, and we were supposed to get some of that, and we ended up getting zero snow. But Milwaukee, Chicago, all up and down Lake Michigan, they were just getting crushed.
Meanwhile, that week that we were in Columbia, 88 every day.
Man. So, have we talked about your trip yet?
No.
You had a great time, though, right?
It was awful. They were chasing us down. I've never seen a town that their vendors are so aggressive. I've never seen anything like that. I'm from Chicago. We know how people are trying to sell you stuff in the street. You've never seen anything like this. It was unbelievable. We're in a car. We're in a little van, a minivan, to take the tour of downtown Cartagena. And the moment we all get out of this car, it's like flies on shit. Hey, you want to buy this? You want to buy that? You want some Gatorade? You want some water? You want some shot glasses? You want some souvenirs? You want anything you could imagine? They are trying to give it, and they will not take no for an answer. You say no, and they say, "Come on, take a look." What? I already said no. What are you talking about?
Oh man, like the girls running after you with the lotion bottles in the mall.
I haven't experienced that.
Maybe it's just me.
Running after you? No.
Oh, man. You know what? The ones are like holding up the lotion. They're like, come on. And you're like, no. They're like, oh, no. It's like, no, go away. No, stop it.
I'm a little familiar with the girls with the perfume that you walk by and they're trying to spray it at you.
Yeah, the similar thing.
Okay. Not 10 times more aggressive than them.
Way worse. You haven't been to New Orleans, have you?
Yeah, we
they do
one
it down there, too, except those are usually bums doing it to you.
Street
performers.
Gotta watch it.
I should not say bums.
Right.
Street performers.
Gotta be careful now. No, I didn't experience that in New Orleans at all. I was on Bourbon Street, and no.
Shocking.
It was great.
When I was there, it was all over the quarter. You could not avoid it.
Interesting.
The street performers.
I saw them, the guys playing the buckets. Yeah, they were all up and down. Yeah, I understand that. But they weren't aggressively trying to. Yeah, I remember a couple of guys asking for dollars. But that was exactly like you'd see, you know, when you're in Chicago walking through downtown and people trying to beg you for money. That was nothing. That was completely fine.
Oh,
this
my God.
Was...
I remember we went downtown Chicago with the kids. Oh, God, this was 5 years ago. So my daughter was, six? And someone, not a street performer, this was a bum. You still say bum? I don't know what the proper term. Homeless person.
He was performing something. It just wasn't playing drums.
Asked us for money, and you know, I think, and we had just been at some thing down at Grant Park, and they were giving away fruit, like bananas and stuff. So I think my daughter and my wife gave the guy a banana. I mean, you'd think they'd be appreciative of that, but. That really hit my daughter hard. She felt so bad for the homeless person. I mean, it's like it really affected her. She hadn't, you know, she doesn't see that here. I'm not saying it's not here. I'm just saying
she
doesn't
didn't
see
come
that
across
here.
It. Yeah.
Right. Because when you're driving over the bridge, you don't see the people living under it. no, that's a problem here.
Yeah. No, I understand. Just the way you put it, just kind of funny.
Okay, sorry.
You weren't trying to be cruel that time. It just came out that way.
Did that sound mean?
The people under the bridge. Yeah, just it sounded like a troll thing or something.
No, they do. They live under the bridges here. They're trying to put up gates. It's like a thing.
Okay.
And then there's people who don't want them to like gate off the under the bridge because that's where the homeless people live. And then the city's like, but we don't want them living under the bridge.
No, I understand. She would see a lot of people asking for money or however you want to do it if she was in Chicago more.
It just broke her. It just broke her heart, and it was just like I felt so bad, you know. She's a 6-year-old, that's trend for you.
And also, I can tell you from experience, giving those people food that's the last thing they want. They want your money
want
so they can
booze.
Go get booze.
They want meth.
Yes. Yes.
What is it? What is it? Fentanyl. That's the thing now, right?
Oh God. Yeah. They want whatever is gonna. Make them forget about their homeless situation. And
yes.
Giving them a sandwich is not going
to
make them forget about it.
It used to just be some Ripple in a brown paper bag.
Right.
Now it's a little harder.
It's whatever they can get their hands on, basically.
Right. So it is obviously not bananas.
Cartagena was great. It's beautiful. I love the weather, even though I was sweating everywhere. But that's the standout thing to me was the way they hawked you trying to sell you stuff. So we went to there's a big fort, and
okay.
my wife and I just went inside the gate and then sat at the base there right inside the gate, because to go take the tour of the fort, you would have had to go like up ramps, and it was high, like it was up there, and it was hot, and it's not exactly covered, and we weren't interested. So we stayed down there.
I mean, you're basically like right on the equator almost, right?
Is it that close? It's the northern tip, I guess, of South America. So we were right there. It's only a 3-hour flight from Miami, so it's not that far.
It's so amazing when you think of that, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a lot farther too. But no, it was much closer than I thought. But so we're sitting inside that gate. So there's guys, all those guys that are hawking you when you walk inside the gate. One of them is selling fluids, water and Gatorade and stuff. He at some point, I guess he asked my name, and I told him my name, Andre. And he goes, "Okay, Andre, maybe when you come out, you get water." And I said, "Maybe later." And he, "Okay, maybe later." So my wife and I go sit inside the gate. The guy that I just talked to is looking in at us like 15 minutes, 30 minutes. He's looking in at us, and every now and then, maybe every 10 minutes or so, he yells out my name. "Hey, Andre." And I look over, and he looks at me and with this weird smile, and "Maybe later." I'm like, oh, my God. Dude, I did not promise I was going to give you my firstborn. I just said I might buy some water from you later. My goodness. So, and it's so hot. Eventually, it gets to the point my wife wants some water. So now I got to get up and look around and find somebody. I didn't see the guy. I wasn't really looking for him, but I didn't see the guy that I said maybe later. So I saw somebody else selling water, and I bought a couple of waters off of that guy. And later on, the guy that saw him, that was asking me and thought I would get water from him maybe later, he looks at us drinking water and he says, "Hey, what happened to maybe later?" So whatever he said. And I'm like, dude, it is not that serious. I bought two waters from someone else. It's okay. You will sell your water to someone. It was very odd that they make it real personal with you, and they really try to sell this stuff to you, which, you know, I understand aggressive selling, and that's their job. That's how they make their money. That's how they feed their family. I understand all that. But I just never seen it that aggressive. Like, they made it seem like if you don't buy something from them, it almost felt like they're going to hurt you. Like, it almost felt threatening for the way they – and there's so many of them. It's like five of them around us at the same time all trying to sell us different stuff. And it's like, no. How many times do I have to tell you no? I'm not interested. Eventually, I started saying no dinero and fronting like I ain't got no money anymore. And that still didn't stop them. Some of them still kept coming after I said no dinero. And I'm like, what do I have to tell you to get away from me? What the fuck, man? And one of the people we were with actually did, like, yell back at one of them, like, no dinero, like, got angry with them. And I saw the look on the guy's face when she said that to him. And he's like, what the hell's wrong with her? But it's just, eventually it gets to you. Like, it's just so suffocating. Like, if you're claustrophobic, you would have really had a panic attack over there. That's how much they surround you. That's how much on top of you they are. So that's the thing about Cartagena. I don't have too much other complaints about the trip other than that. It was a wonderful trip. Well, I take that back. The hotel service was not very good, but that's partially because I was the ugly American and didn't know any Spanish. So I'm there in South America expecting them to understand my English orders. But in my defense, the food menus are in English. And so I'm just ordering what it says on the menu, and they still don't understand me. So, like, why are you printing up your menus in English, and then your server is coming around, and the first thing he says is, "I will be your server tonight," and acting like he knows English. And then everything you ask him after that, he has to call somebody else over to try to translate, because he doesn't actually know English. But you send him over there to say, "I'll be your server," as if he knows English. So I take responsibility on my end for visiting South America, not knowing very much Spanish. That's not good by my part, by anybody that was in my party, my wife and the three people that we went with. None of us really knew any Spanish. And it was a big problem. The language barrier was a problem with the service. But at the same time, the service shouldn't pretend like they know English when they don't actually know any English. But other than that, I had a great time.
That's great. Well, it's good.
It's always like that. It's always a bunch of complaints and a bunch of things that I'm trying to get off my chest and make it seem like it was a terrible, terrible trip. But it wasn't. It was a great. The customs trying to get off the plane was terrible too. They very unorganized. We stood there. It was about 40 minutes we stood in this line to get through customs to get off the plane in Cartagena, and we weren't halfway through the line yet. Now, it was a special circumstance that there was a plane that emptied out right before we got there that was in front of us. And then there was another plane that emptied out right after we got there. So we were back-to-back with all these people. So that made it very bad. As far as standing there in the heat, it wasn't really air conditioned properly. And like I said, it's 88 every day there. So that was pretty torturous. And then finally, like I said, we were there about 40 minutes before somebody saw us. And I don't know if it was my wife's gray hairs that she's got the salt and pepper thing going with her hair, or if it was me being hunched over because of this bad back that I've had for a month now. But for whatever reason, somebody came and saw us. Somebody officially, that works there at the airport, saw us in line and beckoned us and called us out of line and took us over through this line that's through this area that said diplomats, and took us through that line and was able to expedite us and get us through customs a lot faster. So whoever saw that and saw our suffering, thank you very much for that. But because we were going to be there, like I said, we weren't halfway through the line yet. So we had suffered for 40 minutes and we were going to suffer for another hour before we got through that line. Cause they were very, unorganized.
Wow.
But other than that, I had a great time.
Of course you did. I know you did.
I definitely enjoyed the weather. I got back to Memphis and it was friggin' 40 degrees when I got back. And I'm like, what? I was mad. I was mad at the weather after I got back. It was like, what the hell? Because it's the Mid-South. It's supposed to be getting warm by now. I know it's not spring. I mean, technically it's spring. But like, I know in Chicago, it's still, 30 degrees in March and April. I understand that. But down here, it's supposed to be getting warm by now. And it really wasn't. Not yet, anyway. It's kind of warm now. But when we first got back from Columbia, it was like 40 degrees. And I was like, this is bullshit, man.
yeah. It's been a weird
one. I understand 40 degrees to you is tropical.
Yes, I would take 40s a lot.
All right. Thank you very much for hanging in there through my blathering about the trip. It was a great trip, despite all of that. And I commend you for hanging in there with your voice, because you were struggling, but you made it through the whole show. So. Very, very happy for you doing that. Unless you have anything else, I think we're about finished.
Yeah, no, that's why I took it a little bit more easy last night, because I knew we had a long one tonight, but it was all good.
Yep, you hung in there and you made it through the end. So, definitely a fun show, definitely. Always enjoy the baseball preview, even though we realized that most of these teams are going to be different by the time July is over, just because of the trade deadline and injuries and whatnot. But it's baseball. We have a lot of fun previewing because we're just happy that baseball is back. Oh, and I did have my draft Saturday night, so I could go through that very, very quickly.
How did that go?
I got the number 2 pick overall, so I was able to get Ronald Acuna. So I'm very thrilled with that. And my other good offensive players, I got Bogarts, I got Rafael Devers, and I got I'm taking a chance on Luis Robert. I keep waiting on him to get good for the White Sox, so I'm taking a chance on him this year. One of these years he's going to be pretty good, I hope. After that, my offense is kind of like I don't even want to to talk about the other guys because it really falls off after that. I didn't have the best draft offensively after that because I was trying to shore up my pitching once I got those top offensive players. So my pitchers are, you mentioned Sandy Alcantara in Miami. I took the Cy Young Award winner. Urias from the Dodgers, trying to get some wins because he seems to always be good for wins. Blake Snell. I'm taking a chance on Chris Sale. Hopefully he can make a comeback. Old-ass Charlie Morton, what the hell? Sonny Gray in Minnesota, like I said, I think he's an underrated pitcher. And then the closers, I struggled so much with closers last year because I was trying to go cheap. So I tried to just get three really good ones and be done with it this year. So that worked out to get Ryan Pressly and Clay Holmes. So that's two. But then the third, I goofed up a little bit. I got Raisel Iglesias from the Braves, who got inflammation in his shoulder, which is never good. So that might be a problem. So I'll wait to the for the waivers to start opening up tomorrow, and I'll figure out how to replace him because it looks like I'm gonna need to replace him at least for the next month.
Wow. Okay. Trying to get guys killed already, huh?
It's me. It wouldn't be me otherwise. And I took Tristan Casas for the Red Sox.
Oh no.
Yeah, I took a chance on the kid. I know.
That's my guy.
I know. I gotta take one. At least I didn't take like everybody on your keeper list.
Okay.
But I did take one.
You didn't take Marcus Semien or any of our pitchers?
No, not this time.
Okay. All right.
You don't have Eovaldi, do you, this year?
No. No, we've okay. got a lot of cheap pitchers like Kirby. Well, Framber.
Yep.
So.
I left all those alone.
I think I've got six pitchers that we're keeping, but I think I've only got $42 invested in them.
There you go. That's our deal.
Yeah, it's Kirby, it's Framber, it's Joanne Duran. What, damn,
yeah,
just make
they
him
gotta,
the damn closer, would you?
Yeah, exactly. They got to make him the man eventually. They got to.
And, we've got Tanner Houck for a dollar.
Tanner Houck, he's a buck.
Tanner Houck and James Caprillion, he's a buck.
Ah.
So a couple of he's a buck, couple of he's a bucks, and then, three... three other guys. So, and Kikuchi, we got Yusei Kikuchi.
That seems like our deal every year now. We're going to have some cheap pitching we carry over, and we're going to have a lot of money to get some bats.
Yeah, that seems to be our move.
Yeah. let's go. Mount up.
Tomorrow's Declaration Day. I'll be sending that in and, taking your advice, and we're going to have a lot of money.
As always.
I traded Kevin Gausman. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Somebody took him off our hands at $33 salary.
Right. That's the only reason to trade him is he's a little bloated salary-wise.
Yes. I got a couple of draft picks for him. It's like I wasn't going to keep him.
Right.
But then I got an offer for Abreu for like their 82nd. I'm like, no, you're not giving me your lowest. No. No.
Hey, they gotta ask. Can't get it unless you ask.
Yeah, I do like that we had two more teams tonight that sent out trade bait, and they just write these glowing reviews for these. Did you notice that when I sent it, I said, "Here's some guys. I just listed them in their salary, right?"
Yep.
I don't. You don't need a bio on the guy, making him sound like he is the greatest pitcher ever. Or the greatest hitter of all time. Like, he is a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer.
And you can have
email?
Him.
Did you read that email that I sent earlier in the offseason?
I don't remember it, but.
It was right around when I sent out who my declared keepers were. Right after the GOAT meeting, and I said, and sure enough, any of these guys who I'm not keeping are all first ballot Hall of Famers. And, the only reason I don't keep all these guys is to keep the league competitive.
Yeah, I think I remember that email.
I was just like, But yeah, just, there was another one that was sent out, and it's like, oh, this guy is just like the greatest thing ever. It's such so much salesmanship for players that you're throwing back.
These are ad guys. You know by now.
I know.
They can't help
it.
They can't help themselves. I look forward to those because I just laugh. It's entertaining.
They run down the list.
This guy made the All-Star team last year, and he looks like he's going to be their three-hitter, and then you can have him because I don't want him. Like, what? Okay.
But then if you offer me a pick for him, I'm going to tell you to make it better.
Right. I'm insulted by your offer for this All-Star.
For this guy I don't want. It's a gentleman's game.
It's a rite of passage. You know the season is about to be underway.
And we have a new team, and we'll be there, and I'm sure we'll have a report back in the next couple of weeks. And you said the draft's coming up already? It's just crazy.
The draft will be the last week of the month, so we're almost guaranteed to get a show in before then, just recapping our Chicago follicles, volleys, and
April 27th.
Yep, meeting the new team and then saying hi to the new commish, who we know very well, of course.
Yes.
So looking forward to Chicago, even though it's apparently going to be a wintry nightmare.
We're getting all four seasons, it sounds like, in 24 hours.
I titled one of our past podcasts recapping Chicago, All Four Seasons in 24 Hours. That happened before.
We're going to get sounds like we're getting it again. So.
Yeah.
I'll let you go. I'm gonna get to bed. Got 2 days of baseball crash course before I pack up and head down to Chicago on Friday, and I'll see you Friday.
And I'll be in and out tomorrow, in case you're texting and don't hear back from me, because I'm getting an MRI on this back, so I can try to figure out what the hell is going on here.
Yeah, I think I sent you what I planned on keeping. You didn't, other than telling me it's like, you might be keeping a couple guys too many. Other than that, I'm pretty set.
Yeah, I didn't have any other issues other than that. But
yeah, in the absence of a last-second trade offer or something, I don't anticipate my team changing too much here over the next 17 hours.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll be looking forward to setting all that up and ready to see each other Friday night.
Yeah, we'll do it live.
All right, we are, like I said, guaranteed to get another podcast in before the draft aftermath, so that'll be either next week or the week after that. It won't be too long. Recapping our trip to Chicago for our annual baseball draft, which we are definitely looking forward to, even though the weather's going to be shitty. Okay. Very long show.
It's a good thing
long.
That we'll be in a room for 7 hours doing the draft.
Unless the power goes out or something.
I think we can still do the draft without power.
Some of us can. We're on autopilot like that. We can say 15 without the lights on. We don't need lights to bid people up. All right. Very good baseball preview. Hopefully everybody enjoyed that and our ramblings in the after show. As you found out, if you didn't know why we are the kings of non sequitur, you definitely found out in that after show, because I don't know what we were just talking about for the last 43 minutes, but we were talking. So hopefully you all enjoyed it. All right. He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been Kings of Non Sequitur, the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Our baseball preview. It's a whole new ball game, like Lou and Jersey said 3 hours ago. It's going to be a different ball game, and it's going to look different. And I'm old. I don't like a lot of the changes, but that's because I'm old. We will talk to you sometime next week or the week after, recapping our trip to Chicago. See you then.